This free program is paid for by the listeners of WBAI New York. If you're not already a member, think about joining us to help keep free speech alive.
Should have no standing, meaning that the ministry actually deprived these Hibakusha of their just benefits.
But some are concerned that the money will come too late. Kim Yong-gil of the Korean A-bomb Victims Group says the average age of survivors is now 75. Kim says in another 10 to 20 years, they will all be gone. His organization has started an anti-nuclear weapons and peace campaign because they say it's more effective when actual victims of a nuclear weapon call for the end of nuclear weapons around the world. But Kim also wants the United States to show more responsibility for the use of nuclear weapons. The 1951 San Francisco Peace Treaty that ended the Second World War did not require the U.S. to give any compensation to the survivors. Kim says even a small gesture to the Korean survivors would be better than nothing. We are hoping to build a peace park like the one in Hiroshima here in Korea, Kim says. He hopes that the United States will at least give some money to help them build this. Kim and other A-bomb survivors plan to make their case known at a conference aimed at reducing nuclear arms to be held next year in New York. Jason Strother, FSRN, Seoul.
You've been listening to Free Speech Radio News. Our newscast is supported by Pacifica Radio, community radio affiliates, and listener supporters. We podcast at www.fsrn.org. That's fsrn.org. Our newscast is produced by Benad K. Joes and Catherine Comp. Our headlines editor was Andrew Stelzer, and the technical production team at KPFA in Berkeley includes Rose Katapchi and Scott Pham. From Bogota, Colombia, I'm Manuel Rueda.
Free Speech Radio News. Nice to hear it at this hour. This is WBAI in New York City, and I'm happy to be here this morning. I have the unpleasant task of asking you for contributions to support this program and this station, but I have some wonderful material to offer you as a thanks for supporting the station. I'll tell you a little bit about it as we go on with the night. I have a telephone call scheduled with Paul Krasner, who probably waiting eagerly to hear from us. And it turns out that this is the time when people start remembering what happened on Max Yasker's farm when suddenly, it looked like there was a new world in formation for, well, actually, it lasted for a better part of a week, this new world going back to the garden. But this is the age of assisted memory, and we have tapes, and we have tapes, and we have tapes, and we have recordings, and we have photographs, and we have news stories, and we even have a recreation of the events that took place at Max Yasker's farm. remember about what it felt like in the week leading up to Woodstock. I did not go. I did not go. Paul Krasner, who I'm going to be talking to, I believe did go. And hundreds of thousands of other people, including my brother and his pregnant wife, they went. And they had all the mud they could eat. And wonderful music and memories that lasted for 40 years and memories that were assisted by films and recordings. The parts left out of the Woodstock film. And we have a premium. I haven't gotten any instructions on how many of them we will have or what price to charge for them. So I can set the price myself. Paul Krasner's book, I don't know what price to set for that. But maybe we'll be able to make it somehow... kind of a... Now, why did that say no disc? I put it... Oh, because it's a DVD. That's why. Well, someone quite unconnected to the premium sent me a letter. Some weeks ago, I was on the bus going home, and I was peeking at someone's daily news, and there was an article about a couple pictured on the cover of the Woodstock album and on the movie poster about how they are still together 40 years later, about who they are and what they do. There was also a sidebar, an article on how to get back to the garden, which, of course, is a reference to the famous Joni Mitchell song. I would have gone out later to get my own copy, but there's nowhere near my home that sells papers, and even if there were, this edition was one of those that had Michael Jackson on the cover. And in my neighborhood, that would have been sold out early in the morning. Well, I wrote to several people about the recording. My friend Paul Blumstein, who I've known since the 60s, including my friend Paul Blumstein, who I've known since the 60s, and he looked it up on the Daily News website, if you don't have a computer, and he printed it out for me. And I thought you might be interested, so I made your copy. My original is in color, but I could only make black and white, and he didn't include the sidebar. It is. By Jim Farber, the Daily News music critic. All the images snapped during the original Woodstock weekend. One stands above all. A young couple huddled together in a blanket, standing alone in a sea of people lying on wet ground. It is an image of enduring love, care, and protection that earned iconic status through its placement on the cover of the original Woodstock album in 1970, as well as on the movie poster. 40 years later, the couple in the photo, Nick and Bobby Erkoline, both 60, remain together. They married 2 summers after the fabled weekend, and they still live less than an hour's drive from the original concert site of Bethel, New York, and within spitting distance of where they both grew up. Nick Erkoline works for the Orange County, New York Department of Housing, and Bobby is a resident nurse at the elementary school in their hometown of Pine Bush. The 40th anniversary of the Ultimate Hippie Be-In, this August 15th and 17th, has thrown the Urkel Lines into the spotlight again, something that they never expected or thought. They say they remember nothing of the original shot taken by Burke Uzzell. "We weren't striking a pose," Nick says. "We were as surprised as everybody to see that photo on the album cover. They discovered it while at a friend's house listening to the album and passing around the gatefold jacket. First, Nick recognized the famous yellow butterfly staff in the left corner. It belonged to this guy, Harvey," Nick says. "We latched onto him that day because he was having a very bad experience. He was tripping pretty heavily, and he lost his friends. After I saw that staff, I said, 'Hey, that's Al Blanket.' Then I said, 'Hey, that's us.'" Bobby, then 20, wasn't overly impressed. Woodstock was over and done with at that time, she says. Didn't seem like a big deal. The only thing was that then I had to tell my mother I had gone. She didn't know, but by then she didn't mind. The two had arrived in the middle of the weekend, a rare feat given all that the main roads were closed by then. "We were local kids, so we knew the back roads," Nick says. "About 5 miles away, we abandoned this big white 1965 Chevrolet Impala station wagon. The two didn't realize the impact that their photo had had until Woodstock's 20th anniversary, when the world's media began seeking them out. In fact, their memories of the original event have more to do with the scene than the music, because they were too far away to hear that much. I remember the rain, the lack of the toilets, and the body odor," Bobby says. "I also remember an orange haze from the glowing lights of the stage. It was everywhere, lighting up the sky." The pair had met only 3 months earlier over Memorial Day weekend at the bar where Nick worked. This water brought this waiter, I guess, brought this beautiful blonde in one day and said, "This is my girlfriend. Keep an eye on her," Nick explained. "Every night she stood in front of me, and we got friendlier and friendlier. Then one weekend he made the mistake of leaving her home while he went to the shore with the guys, and he never told her." That was the end of that, and the beginning of this. "Despite all the time gone by," Nick says, "they still get recognized. We were in Germany, and right when we walked into the hotel, they knew who we were." As to why their photo was chosen, Nick has a theory. "It's peaceful," which is what the event was about. And he says, "It's an honest representation of a generation. When we look at that photo, I don't see Bobby and me. I see our generation." And they're still going strong. There's a picture of them in 2009, and they're both age 60, and they're wrapped up in, I guess it's a bedroll. And I don't know whether you remember that picture, but I certainly do. And I want to thank DJ Perez for sending it to me. And I want to see if I can figure out how we can make a premium out of this director's cut, 3 days of peace and music, 40th anniversary Ultimate Collector's Edition, celebrating the greatest rock concert in history on Blu-ray and DVD, June 9, from Warner Home Video. 3 hours of enhanced content includes 2 hours of bonus performances, some unearthed after 4 decades with five groups who performed but never appeared in the film. The two extra hours of rare performance footage features 18 new performances as never before seen from 13 groups, including Joan Baez, Country Joe McDonald, Santana, The Who, Jefferson Airplane, Canned Heat, Joe Cocker, and five, Paul Butterfield, Creedence Clearwater Revival, The Grateful Dead, Johnny Winter, and Mountain, who played at Woodstock but never appeared in any film version until now. So this is the ultimate collector's edition DVD. One, two, three discs. And there's the Blu-ray is, of course, one disc, but it is a wonderful package, and it sells for around $70, and doesn't seem too exorbitant for me to say $100, because that will include a membership to WBAI. And if you make it $125, we'll throw in Paul Krasner's book. Or you can have Paul Krasner's book for, say $30. That might not be enough, because maybe it doesn't include the cost of the book. Let's make it $35, all right, for Paul Krasner's book. $100 for the director's cut of the 40th Anniversary Ultimate Collector's Edition celebrating the greatest rock concert in history. And remind you that there are people in the tally room now who are waiting to answer the telephone call. If you call 212-209-2950, you can use a credit card. You can pay in some kind of installment plan over a year. And most important, you get to vote in the WBAI elections, which are, to say that they're crucial at this point, is it's a very mild statement. So that's 212-209-2950. Can we have one person who wants this package? 212-209-2950. While you're calling, we're going to call Paul Krasner and try to get him to reminisce. Let's see now if I can get this to play. Stop. Eject. Insert. And play. Play, Donyu.
I've known Jerry for, what, 4 or 5, 6 months now. When he moved into, like, the family group that I already knew for quite a while. And in that time, I got to know him real well, and I learned to love him. And, we ball and everything, but, like, it's really a pretty good thing, because, like, there's plenty of freedom, because, like, we're not going together, and we're not in love or anything like that, you know? Like,
you communicate with your parents?
I can communicate with them on one level, and that now I've been away from home for 2 years, and at first it was very rough. Now, they're beginning to mellow about it, you know, and, like, it's not so hard on them that I'm the way I am. But I can't really communicate to them about anything that's really important, because they just could not understand it. Like, my mother's really, really lives in a lot of pain because she's sure I'm going to go to hell, and there's nothing I can do to tell her that, you know, that just doesn't exist for me, you know? So there's no communication on those levels.
My father once asked me whether I was in a communist training camp or something in the house that I lived in. And, you know, like, I could understand, you know, where he's coming from, because when he's an immigrant, you know, and so he came over here to better himself economically and socially and all that other crap, but make it better for me. And he can't understand why I didn't play, you know. He's saying, you know, why aren't you playing the game, you know? Here's all this opportunity. Here are all these things which have so much value, but they only have value to him, and he can't understand why they don't have value to me. But then again, he does have wisdom enough to, you know, allow me to be who I am. And, you know, he's just, I guess he has some kind of idea in his head, you know, that I will, by doing what I'm doing, learn for myself how to live. And that's what he wants me to do anyway. So, you know, he can't understand why I am the way I am, but he very much wants me to be that way, because that he knows that's the only thing for me.
He started his trip when he was 4 years old.
Really?
Yeah.
Yeah. Nothing to do with drugs or anything?
No.
Me neither.
That's a cop-out, or...
I don't know. Like, I used to be into drugs, and I was very heavy on drugs, but now it seems like it's almost contrived. It's like drugs and revolution and the United Front and all. You know, I just... You know, I'm a human being, and that's all I want to be, and I don't want to... You know, I don't want to have a mass change, because a mass change only brings around mass insanity, you know. And I just want to be myself and find a place where I can, you know, maintain some kind of balance within myself, you know, and kind of like, you know, the Hamlet trip, you know, to be or not to be.
Do you think you could ever communicate with a guy like Nixon or Westmoreland?
Oh, I hope so.
Yeah, but they're doing their thing, aren't they?
I don't know. It's like they are neurotic or psychotic, or, you know, having fun, as they say in Lake Mac.
Hi,
I don't know.
Paul Krasner?
Yeah, right. But
Paul?
It's not true, because...
Are you talking to me?
Yes, I am.
Are you talking to me? Are you talking to me?
Were you at Woodstock?
Yes. You mean the original one in 69?
Yes.
Yes, I was there.
Well, you know, it's been commemorated more than... I don't know, than Memorial Day the last couple of years. Have you had any feelings about the commemorations?
Well, but don't forget, this is a year with a zero at the end.
Yes.
It's the 40th anniversary, and media always pounce on anything of the that it's a you know, it's almost like we're going back to the decimal system.
Well, they sort of celebrated the 25th anniversary too. And,
oh yeah, that's and, true. Well, yeah, 20, yeah, and 75th too. Yeah, they'll be just like they have the Civil War reenactments. We'll have hippie reenactments of Woodstock. You know, get mud trucked in from neighboring rainy counties.
Well, do you remember much about it? They say if you remember, you weren't there.
Yeah, but those who say that didn't even know about it.
But you do remember some things
about it. It was...
3 days of peace and music.
Well, you know, what's interesting to me, having planned for the counter convention in Chicago the previous year, which, of course, the police riot spoiled. But what happened in Woodstock was kind of the fantasy that we had envisioned, you know, that there would be bands playing, that you could, there would be a sense of community, and there would be people who, in the words of Groucho Marx, trusted their friends more than they trusted the government.
I didn't hear Groucho Marx saying that, but I think that's a good thing to remember.
Well, did you hear him say, I'm trying to think of something else he said now.
He said that you were the only living Lenny Bruce.
Oh, yeah, but, you know, you got to consider the source. But no, that was very flattering. But Lenny was unique, so I took it with a grain of sea salt. So, were you there? I know you were. There was a kind of post Woodstock nearby that you were at.
It was a pre Woodstock that I was at. I produced a series of concerts in or closer to the town of Woodstock, in on a farm, Pam Copeland's farm. And you were there one time. I remember that you drove up there with us for one weekend. The Sound Out, the Woodstock Sound Out.
That's right.
And
there was a singer there who when I was invited to go on the local PBS station in New York, it was Channel 13, and be a host on a talk show called Free Time.
Mm-hmm.
And I would have, it was my first and last encounter, because Marilyn Sokol, an actress that you know, played the part of Timothy Leary's wife. No, I'm sorry, his mother. And I that was a time when Tim had been in Algeria, and under the supervision of Black Panther Eldridge Cleaver. And so I asked her. She was wearing a fur coat. I said, "That's a lovely coat you're wearing, Mrs. Leary. What's it made of?" And she said, "It's made of Algerian camel hump." And so I had the button in my ear from the producer of the show. She's saying to me, "Paul, you know, announce that that's an actress, that it's not really Tim Leary's mother." And I just ignored it. And I heard the voice again in my head, and she's saying, "Paul, are you going to announce that it's an actress or not?" And I kind of unobtrusively shook my head no, knowing that that was my first and last thing there. But one of the guests on that show was a singer I heard at the pre-Woodstock festival. I think she had red hair. Her name was something like McClanahan or something?
Ellen McElwain.
Yes.
Ah, I've been speaking to her. She's going to be coming, I hope, to Radio Unnameable in another week.
Uh-huh.
Yes, she's great, great performer.
Yeah, no, I thought when I heard her there, that's why I could select my guests. So that was a continuity. So I'm glad she's still performing. I don't know if she's as famous as she should be, but I just remember her talent.
Well,
all right,
she's wonderful, yeah. And she was at the Sound Out, and she's going to be doing a recreation of the Sound Out. I just did the preface or the introduction to a book called The Roots of Woodstock, which is about those Sound Out concerts, and that's for sale now. I should try to get a copy of a couple of.
I thought you were reading it. I thought it was a family, that nice family, the Roots. Let's have them for dinner sometime. But well, that's very interesting. That because the branches have spread out. You know, it's gone from. The Grateful Dead at Woodstock, this is post the roots of Woodstock, from the Dead at Woodstock all the way to Fish, which is in the tradition of the Dead, at the Empire Theater in Coachella Valley. So it's spread out. You can name a dozen different annual concerts that are in the tradition of those days.
Well, we just got a letter from Nigeria that said they want to know what the $35 premium is. And it is your book, Paul.
Oh.
Who's to say what's obscene? Politics, culture, and comedy in America today.
This is the first thing that I've heard of that you can trust coming from Nigeria.
Well, it came from Nuoc, who is certainly trustworthy. Yeah. You can trust Nuoc. And your book, can you give us a kind of a quick summary of the topics that are discussed in this book, Paul? Because it's not quite that period, Woodstock. But it does talk about, I think it does talk about the Chicago 10 trial. And
well, in the context of, there's a piece called The Parts Left Out of Chicago 10, which was a documentary by Brett Morgan, then about the police riots that led up to the conspiracy trial, and because cameras weren't allowed in the courtroom, part of the documentary is animated reenactments. And so I had been invited to write a few of the animated reenactment scenes, not just from the courtroom, but just scenes that were not filmed. So, and rather than have talking heads talk about it, so there's a piece in the book about some of the changes that were made and how they came about and why they came about, and you know, some of the things that people wanted in that weren't in, and that weren't in that people didn't want in, and it was a very personal thing to everybody connected with it, but it was Brett Morgan's baby, and he was born 2 months after the demonstrations in Chicago. So it was, you know, his vision. It was like his painting of this event with his musical soundtrack to it, and it was his baby, except the backers were the ones who diapered it.
Or pampered it.
Depending whether it depends.
Yes, it depends.
I'll take a powder.
Yes. Well, the parts that were left out were they were based on reality. The moments that you actually participated in, the hurricane, where you and Abby Hoffman and Anita Hoffman were in Key West.
One of the Key Islands further down. But the thing was that we had taken acid for that particular hurricane to enhance the experience, and the backers were not happy about having, you know, they didn't want to divert attention to the anti-war theme by bringing drugs into it, you know, and I was disappointed because, for better or worse, it's what happened, and also it was what it represented what the yippies were, you know, that they saw the connection between busting people for psychedelics and dropping napalm on them on the other side of the world. So it was countercultural history that was being tampered with. So that's just one example, but there's a piece, one of my favorites, on great moments in memory loss, where I just went into all of the testimony and some of the 9/11 and the attorneys that were unjustly fired, and some of it's just so blatant and shocking how people could just say I don't remember something when it was just bordering on humanly impossible for them to forget.
You talk a little bit about Reagan's memory loss during the when he was questioned about Iran-Contra.
Oh yeah, well this was before, you know, when he first was running for president, in fact, there were people who were already saying that he was senile, at which point Reagan volunteered to take a senility test, which, when one volunteers to take a senility test, that's one of the signs of senility. So he didn't even have to take the test. But, you know, I don't know if it made any difference, because senile or not, he did a lot of harm to the country that we're still feeling the effects of. And yet he was my hero as a kid. You know, what did I know?
Well, he wasn't a political figure when you were a kid. He was
sold light bulbs.
Yeah, right.
Right, and cigarettes.
Right, and 20 mules
and hair tonic.
Borax.
But you know, I saw it was my first movie that I saw when I was a kid was Newt Rockne. What was it? The Gipper. That movie, and I really just liked the song. And I went home and I told my parents how much I liked that, and the song, just the background music, you know, cheer, cheer for old Notre Dame. You take the Notre, I'll take the Dame.
Send the freshman out for gin. Yep.
I wrote that when I was 8 years old. So my parents, they were saying, oh, if you want to go to Notre Dame, you can. You know, that's how, I said, no, I just like the song. But that's how nurturing they were. So, but I got disillusioned, by him sooner or later. And then, but the first, you know, my limited TV writing career, is bookended by two generations of Reagans. I was in 1980. I was the head writer for an HBO special satirizing the election campaign, and so a lot of it was satirizing Ronald Reagan. And then exactly a decade later, I was a writer on the Ron Reagan Jr. show. Ron being not a chip off the old block. He was more like a countercultural mutation who still respected Reagan as his father.
Hipper than the Gipper.
What on the Gipper?
Hipper.
Hipper than the Gipper, yeah. I'll give him a T-shirt that says that for Christmas.
So you're still in touch with him. Do you intend to do any more writing for TV, or, I mean, are you trying to?
No, I'm not in touch with Ron Reagan. Haven't been for a while. We got along fine. No. TV writing is not for me, because it has to go through too many screens. It gets filtered. And, it's not so on... Bill Maher show, for example, because he's on HBO, and so it really, and even the ones that are on Comedy Central, you know, so they say a lot of four-letter words, big deal. The bleep is so short that even a three-year-old kid knows what they're saying. So it's just a game they're playing. You know, we said bleep, and kids now are getting aroused when they hear the bleep sounds. You know, it's like Pavlovian hound dogs.
Right, they're writing bleep on walls. I've seen that.
That's right. Yeah. That's right. That's the word. People are getting into fistfights if somebody says bleep you. When the new F word is actually fear. That's what everything that you see coming through the media seems to be aimed at, you know, creating fear.
Well,
whether it's a commercial or a news story or a senator's speech.
Well, one of my big fears right now is that the WBAI will sink, because we have some very much more serious problems than ever before in our financial approach to the world. We have... we just managed to make up for the fact that we were 4 months behind in rent, and were served with an 8-day eviction for our studios.
Well,
and We are trying to ensure that that doesn't happen again. For the last 4 or 5 years, we have been not paying our tariff to the Pacifica Foundation, and we owe them quite a bit of money. And so this August fund drive is an attempt to get us back moving toward an even keel. And you have been kind enough to offer us a certain limited number of copies of your wonderful Who's to Say What's Obscene. And someone called up to get one copy of it already, and we could stand a few more people calling. Come on now, 212-209-2950. And I don't know, can we arrange to have you autograph these books, Paul? Is that possible?
Well, you have them there at the station, right?
Well, you might
I can
make
do
a
it.
Stamp. Maybe.
When Abbie Hoffman was on The Lam, and he and Anita wrote a book together called, it was Letters from the Underground, I think, something to that effect.
Right.
And so Anita gave me a copy that she signed, and Abbie sent me a post-it that he had signed. So I could send you post-its with my name on, but I don't know how else we would do it.
Well, that's pretty good, you know. Say maybe a note that says, affix this post-it to the book.
Well, I don't want anybody using that book as a premium if they haven't the sense to know what to do with a post-it.
Mm.
I mean, even Luddites know that.
212-209-2950. We have two people calling at the moment. And if we could get two or three more people calling, well, then we'd have four or five people calling. Is my arithmetic correct?
It sounds right.
It sounds right. Yeah, I think it's right. 212-209-2950.
That's the number.
And maybe we could read a bit from this book. I earmarked one section where you talk about Kurt Vonnegut. In a foreword to a collection of my satire, The Winner of the Slow Bicycle Race, Kurt Vonnegut wrote, "Paul Krasner in 1963 created a miracle of compressed intelligence, nearly as admirable for potent simplicity, in my opinion, as Einstein's E equals MC squared. With the Vietnam War going on, and its critics discounted and scorned by the government and the mass media, Krasner put on sale a red, white, and blue poster that said, 'Bleep Communism.' At the beginning of the 1960s, bleep was believed to be so full of bad magic as to be unprintable. In the most humanely influential American novel of this half century, The Catcher in the Rye, Holden Caulfield, it will be remembered, was shocked to see that word on a subway station wall. He wondered what seeing it might do to the mind of a little kid. Communism was to millions the name of the most loathsome evil imaginable. To call an American a communist was like calling somebody a Jew in Nazi Germany. By having bleep and communism fight it out in a single sentence, Krasner wasn't merely being funny as heck. He was demonstrating how preposterous it was for so many people to be responding to both words with such cockamamie Pavlovian fear and alarm." Then you go on to talk about how he said that you gave him a feeling of optimism. Might not have been quite enough, because he did himself in but I mean.
Well, that was an accident, though. He didn't commit suicide.
That's right.
You know, he fell on the front steps of his home. I have a picture of him on my bulletin board, sitting on those very steps and sort of waving at whoever's looking at the picture. You know, there's a postscript to that story that you just read, which is that in 1964, which is when I published that poster, Robert Scheer, a California journalist who does the website Truth Dig, I saw him in New York. He had been working at the City Lights bookstore in San Francisco, but he was visiting New York, and he was telling me about what was going on in Vietnam, and he wanted to go there, you know, just not write about it abstractly. On the basis of selling enough of those bleep communism posters, I was able to get out. I remember I was wheeling my daughter in a baby carriage, and I had the checkbook in there for some reason. I guess I was on the way to the bank, and Bob Scheer was going with me. And I took out the checkbook, and I was able to give him a check. I said, how much would the round-trip fare there to be in hotels and stuff? And he had already figured it out because he wanted to figure out some way to do it. And it was $1,900 at this point. And I gave him a check for that amount, and he went. And he wrote the seminal articles on how the United States got involved in Vietnam. So that was, you know, it was just so appropriate to have those posters finance his trip. On the other hand, Country Joe McDonald got arrested for having it on the back of his car.
He did.
Yeah.
You and I had a benefit. You and I and Wavy Gravy did a benefit for something called the Community Breast. Do you remember that?
Oh, that's right, because it had to be nurtured.
Right. It was called To Each All Things, T-E-A-T. And it raised a fair amount of money that was used as to buy a poster to invite people to come to levitate the Pentagon. Do you remember that?
Now that you say it, it's stirring some old cells that were snoozing.
Yeah, and we had to fight Walter Boart, who wanted a big portion of the money that was raised at that concert to support the East Village Other. And you finally settled the problem by saying, give it to him.
I did say that?
Yes.
And what'd you listen to me for? I usually don't give orders like that.
No. Well, it was resignation. It wasn't like an order.
Uh-huh. Well, give it to him.
Huh. Yeah, give it to him.
Huh. Well, what a sucker I was. I mean, it hadn't been agreed upon, had it, that's what would happen?
No, he hit us with it after the concert was over. He wouldn't have done that if he thought that the concert was going to be a failure, but it was a big success. Lots of people came, and lots of people contributed, and made a very nice poster. You don't have any of those posters, do you?
Oh, I don't think so. You
levitate
know, I'm going body. Through.
Boy, I'd love to see one of those.
Oh, no, it's a collector's item.
Yeah.
You know, there's some universities did it, interested in my archives.
Uh-huh. Which
the translation of that is all the crap in my garage. And so
your crap is someone's treasure.
Well, it turns out that there's some collector's items there, dust, for example. Dust collects itself, actually. It doesn't need a collector. So I'm going through. So, maybe I'll find one of those. I have no idea. It's strange thinking that that my garbage will be cataloged somewhere. So, anyway, you know, I want to underscore what you were saying about BAI in terms of needing to survive, because I don't think anybody is listening. I mean, who listens to a fundraiser? So it must mean that they have some relation to the station, even if they're not subscribing or renewing. It's just how much a station like this is needed in these times. These times are like nothing that I've seen in my lifetime, and where change in so many different ways is accelerating that you can see dinosaurs in the guise of people trying to hold on to their own survival. And with all the suffering that's going on, it's still an exciting time to be alive. It helps if you're not suffering and in anguish and angry at how you've been taken. But you know, WBAI is one of the pieces of grass growing through the cement, not the dinosaur trying to survive. That's my metaphor for the day. I never metaphor I didn't like.
Well, here's three people who have pledged their support to WBAI, Paul. One of them has gotten your book. And one of them has gotten the whole package, the Woodstock Director's Cut, the 40th Anniversary Ultimate Collector's Edition, celebrating the greatest rock concert in history, and your book, and somebody else has just contributed $25 so that they can vote in the election. Do you want your names mentioned? Let's see. Gary Davidson, thank you very much. Charis Cohn, thank you very much. I don't know. And Seamus Ferguson. Now, I don't know whether Charis Cohn still is working at Harper's Magazine, but for years and years she did those reports at the beginning of the numbers reports at the beginning of the magazine every month. She's a good writer. She used to work on the WBAI folio, and I thank her for calling. I'm glad she's listening. And if you would like to have the same things that she has, well, you can call and you can pledge your support too to 212-209-2950. You can get a copy of Paul Krasner's book for $35, which will make you a subscriber, and you will have a chance. You'll get this, or you can get the Woodstock 3 days of peace and music for $135, and we'll throw in Paul's book. 212-209-2950. Come on, we can have one call. Can we have one person calling in to join those others? 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. I want to read another section here, Paul, if I can.
Is that dead air I hear?
Yeah.
I'm a dead air whisperer.
Huh. I decided to take a tab of LSD at lunch before testifying. call me a sentimental fool. But why? Excerpt. Well, to enhance the experience. No, actually, because I want to throw up in court. I've learned that if I drop acid with a big meal, it always makes me vomit. That way, I don't have to memorize all those dates and places, and it'll be my theatrical statement on the injustice of the trial. Abby was furious and stopped speaking to me. 10 months later, I mailed him a movie ad. Abby's favorite movie, The Professionals, was playing in our neighborhood, resulting in a reconciliation.
Oh, that was the shorter version, because you were the one who arranged that reconciliation.
Uh-huh. Well, thank you for giving me credit for that.
You get credit in my autobiography, but this was a short version of that.
Oh, I do? Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. You'll get credit in my autobiography for sure.
Oh, yeah? Well, you'll get cash in mine.
Oh, well, right.
Maybe gold bullions.
Uh-huh.
Did Midas eat gold bullion soup? Inquiry minds want to know.
Oh, Pat Boone. Pat Boone. You know, I knew Pat Boone.
Really?
Yeah, he was he was in an acting class that I was in.
I think he failed.
Well, he was very nice. He wore those white buck shoes. You know,
I wore white buck shoes on account of him. I think I was in maybe high school.
Uh-huh.
And I wore white bucks. And the thing was to get it, there were two groups. Those who kept them clean, I think they would use some kind of toothpaste or something to keep them just shiny white. And people like me who deliberately messed them up at the beginning with some dirt so that you wouldn't worry about getting them dirty anymore.
Right. I was in the second category, too.
But here's the range of Pat Boone. My wife Nancy was doing a video of him speaking in tongues.
Oh.
And he was very gracious about it. He sat on the bench with some minister, and he goes like, No, but it was very slow and gentle. And then he finishes it, and I think I may have this wrong, but then he looks up and says, "Okay, now do you want to walk away?" shot, you know, a total pro. Then to the picture, the photo of him once, which was in Hustler magazine, I think, where he was in, or maybe it was a story about him that he had, he was holding a carton of popcorn. But it wasn't all popcorn that was in the carton. And that's enough said.
Do you have any idea why he made Nixon's enemies list?
Well, because he and I smoked a joint together after acting class. I think that was what did it.
Aha!
Wow, I was wondering about that.
Was he on Nixon's enemies list?
I believe so.
Well, he certainly did everything he could not to be there. You know, he said, I would rather see my four daughters shot before my eyes than see them grow up in a communist United States. I would rather see those kids blown into heaven than taught into hell by communists.
Wow.
That's...
He did say that.
It's quoted in your book.
As an example of the Cold War hysteria. So is it the strangest time you've ever lived in, or is it just me? I feel like I'm in the New Yorker cartoon caption.
Two one two, two oh nine. 2950. And you're listening to Paul Krasner on WBAI in New York City. And also, we're being broadcast on KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, and soon, I believe, on WJFF in Jeffersonville, New York, in Grahamsville and Liberty. And
it was streaming on the World Wide Web.
Oh, I almost forgot that, okay. Bill. Thank you. Okay. Streaming on the World Wide Web at WBAI.org and one or two other places, I believe. So lots of people are hearing you, Paul.
And even more are seeing you.
Well, let's see. There are three people in the room with me. That's really the maximum observation that I'm under, I hope, at the moment. There may be a camera or two in the room. But Ken Babbs.
Who is sort of the Ed McMahon to Johnny Carson. He was to Ken Kesey. Although everybody thinks that they're Johnny Carson and everybody else is Ed McMahon. Except Ed McMahon, he didn't know who he was.
That's everyone.
But I remember him when I went, well, anyway, I interrupted you, I'm sorry.
All right, I was about to read from your book, so you interrupted yourself. Krasnus Interruptus.
Oh, my.
Well, should I go on reading that section? Or you must have a copy of your book there. You probably could read some sections of your own book better than I can.
Oh, all right. Hold on one half a second. Just talk among yourselves. I'll get my book.
Okay. I think I ought to put a little energy into trying to tell people about this Woodstock Ultimate Collector's Edition DVD, the director's cut of the film, and the museum at Bethel Woods, the story of the 60s and Woodstock, and the part two of the director's cut, and disc three is Untold Stories, 18 performances that were never seen before. Interviews of the sights and the sounds of...
there's some toilets up around here, some of those rolling outhouses like they had in Newport.
After somebody doesn't exist and then they don't accept the charges and they know you're okay, you cheat the telephone company.
Are you okay?
Oh, yeah. I'm fine, man.
We don't take the car, we walk. Yeah. It's the only way to get there.
Be nice to me, really.
Why? Because my mother wants to make sure I'm all right.
I'm going to call my mother and father. Because, they think this is going to be like another Chicago, you know. Like, I'm going to get my head beaten in and they're terrified. So I'm going to call and tell them, ha ha, I fooled you, I'm alive.
And you don't even have to bother to bring your tickets or anything because they aren't going to collect them. There's no way they can. They got a fence that's like half up and there are people just sitting in that field. It's really beautiful.
I'll try. That's all I can say, really. You don't know how crowded it is here. It's just swarming. What? Up on the ground. Yeah, it was nice. We got wet. Mm-hmm. Yeah, all I miss is the bathtub. Okay, bye.
I didn't even finish styling it.
It's so great in some ways. It's so lazy in others. It's so great that
everybody's
here
for one purpose.
Like, and there's no trouble or anything. Like,
I don't think anybody
really... Get it, man. Look at that. It's ridiculous.
worse every time.
There is no water. I said in the radio, no water, no food, no medical supplies.
Why don't we pray for rain?
They're telling everybody to go home. They called it a disaster area.
Well, that's wrong. They called it a disaster. They should be here.
Everybody's happy.
We called it a disaster area last night. It was really bad. Me? My mother. Hello.
Somebody may have noticed, or all of you may have noticed, our familiar colored helicopter over there. The United States Army has lent us some medical teams and giving us a hand. They're with us, man. They are not against us. They are with us. They're here to give us all a hand and help us. And for that, they deserve it. There are 45 doctors or more, I know of at least 45, who are here without pay because they dig what this is into.
Dr. Jack Maidman, please, with full suturing equipment, your presence is requested. You've got a delivery to make.
Doctor! Marilyn Cohen, wherever you are, Marilyn Cohen, Greg wants you to meet him at the information booth because he wants to marry you. There goes Marilyn!
I'm a farmer.
This
I don't
is
know.
Max Yester.
I don't know how to speak to 20 people at one time, let alone a crowd like this. But I think you people have proven something to the world. Not only to town of Bethel or Sullivan County or New York State, you've proven something to the world. This is the largest group of people ever assembled in one place. We have had no idea that there would be this size group. And because of that, you've had quite a few inconveniences as far as water and food and so forth. Your producers have done a mammoth job to see that you're taken care of. They enjoy a vote of thanks. But above that, the important thing that you've proven to the world is that 500,000 kids, and I call you kids because I have children older than you are, 500,000 young people can get together and have 3 days of fun and music, and have nothing but fun and music. And I, God bless you for it.
Paul? Paul?
It's been very gratifying. You know, I'm
hello?
Delighted
yeah,
to be
yeah,
affiliated with it.
You think there could be something like that now?
It wouldn't feel like it was the first, but that doesn't matter. You know, it's just different. There's a lot of cover bands, mm-hmm. Tribute bands. But I think what made that unique was that there were so many people there were the only Martians on their block. And suddenly they found themselves at a Martian convention.
Right.
And with an incredible music background track going on. And a sense of camaraderie that was almost dreamlike. And it was... I think it was a turning point in the sense of community that developed as a result of that, and people went back, scattered around, and tried to spread that vibe. And from a point of view of people who were in the press tent, who pointed out to me people from the Criminal Intelligence Division of the Army. They were there because, and they realized that, here were maybe 500,000 people representing other people who didn't come there, who did not want to fight in the Vietnam War, and that's what their intelligence told them, just by the response to some of the songs and by their own research. Think tanks were learning about the counterculture. I gave Herman Kahn a tour of the Lower East Side. He was the head of a conservative think tank, the Hudson Institute.
Right.
And one of the things he did, he bought some, went into a bookstore, and the books he bought included something by John Hersey, a book by Allen Ginsberg, and a book on LSD and problem solving. So, the counterculture was ahead of the think tanks, and they had to...
Do you mean to say he didn't have those books already?
Maybe he was buying them as gifts then, because he liked them so much.
Maybe he was buying them to impress you.
I didn't get that impression.
Or to impress Jodie Foster.
That's more like it, yes.
Squeaky Frome,
yes,
is going to be released.
I know. I just did a blog about my acid trip with Squeaky. On Huffington Post. It was on the front page today, so I guess it'll be on the front page tomorrow.
Well, but, can you give us a preview of it?
Well, it was essentially when I was researching the Manson case in 1971 and corresponding with him in prison, and he sent me like a three-page letter of scrawled, single lines, no spaces, about Christ and about the devil and about how he was both, and went on and on and on, rambling on and on and on. And then in the middle of it, in tiny letters, he said, call Squeaky, and put a telephone number there. So, nobody who was surveilling his mail would have gotten that far or even noticed it. And so I called Squeaky. She was in L.A. at the time. At the time, I was living in San Francisco. And told her I got her number from the letter from Charlie. And so I flew to L.A., and took a few tabs of Owsley White Lightning, that was 300 micrograms each.
Oh, man.
With me. Just on a whim, I decided to take them with me. And, Squeaky had, two other roommates. One was, Sandra Good, and the other was Brenda McCann. The three of them, although members of the Manson family, did not participate in the Tate-LaBianca murders. But Squeaky did, 4 years later, attempt to assassinate President Gerald Ford, I think because she was now in the Chevy Chase cult. And, so, anyway, it was a day. So the four of us took the acid, and it was strange because, the hair was growing back, but they had all shaved their heads and gouged a swastika on their foreheads. So there was a scar there, and so, it was like being with some hip airline stewardesses who just had shaved heads and a swastika on their forehead. And I tried not to stare, but it was. But it showed you the level of their commitment to this insane guy that was never a hippie. Just came out of the prison. He had spent most of his years behind bars, and then as a kid, he got sent to juvenile style prisons. And so, but he had a rap and. In one of the letters he wrote to me, he said, I never picked up anybody who hadn't already been discarded by society. So he filled that void that was left by your parents who didn't nurture or however people just felt different and got hassled for it. So, we walked around to some friends of theirs, and then they had me try on Charlie's jacket, not his jacket, a vest about an inch thick, and it had all kinds of snakes and dragons on it, and it was very, very strange trip, and I didn't get as much information as I did, except that the dedication to Manson, it was like a coven of nuns, and they ground up one of the acid tablets and mixed it with vegetable dye and then put it on a letter that they were sending to Charlie, and it just said, words fly fast, and that was supposed to be this signal to him that that he should eat the flower, the petals of the flower that were done in vegetable dye on the letter. So I didn't know that one of the tasks would go to him, but I couldn't say no. They were my hostesses, cupcakes, all of them. So anyway, you want me to read something? Here's just a short little piece, but it was when I was a guest on the Tomorrow Show with Tom Snyder. And he was a real personality. I once described him as having an FM mind and an AM body. On his late, here it is about Tom Snyder. On his late night show Tomorrow, his guests ranged from Jimmy Hoffa to John Lennon, from Ayn Rand to Muhammad Ali, from Charles Manson to Jerry Garcia. For the first 10 minutes of his interview with musician Meatloaf, he kept calling him Meatball. In 1978, when I was a guest on his show in Los Angeles, I ingested magic mushrooms in order to enhance the experience. You know, I'm beginning to notice something, Bob, that a certain pattern that everything I do
is to enhance the experience.
Yeah. I mean, I even smoke a joint in order to enhance the experience of rolling another joint. I lived in San Francisco, where an ex-cop had just assassinated Mayor George Moscone and Supervisor Harvey Milk, only a week after the poisoned Kool-Aid massacre in Jonestown by San Francisco cult leader Jim Jones. Snyder mentioned it, and I brought up the possibility that the CIA was involved with mind control experimentation. Aha, he said, so you're paranoid, huh? Well, Tom, I said, conspiracy and paranoia are not synonymous. Listen, I'll tell you about a real conspiracy theory. Incidentally, Bob, I just, you know, speaking of paranoia, I've gotten flashes of paranoia now that I've gone on Twitter because so many people are following me. but seriously, folks, I've only sent out one Twitter, which said, I have Twitter's block. And never again. Okay, so I said, I'll tell you about a real conspiracy theory, Tom. He said, okay. He said, what? I said, remember that horse ruffian who broke her leg in the race and they shot her? And he said, yeah, what about it? Well, you want to know why they shot her? Why, he asked, furrowing his brow. Because, I said, she knew too much. Snyder looked at his producer as if to say, who booked this flake? Then he realized that I was putting him on, and he started laughing. To me, secretly peeking on mushrooms, it looked as though Tom Snyder was doing Dan Aykroyd doing Tom Snyder on Saturday Night Live. And his laughter sounded like a string of eerie musical notes. At the same time, Abbie Hoffman was on the lam, but this was November 30th, and I had promised to wish him a happy birthday on the air, which I did. Where is he? Snyder asked. Maybe we can get him on the show. He's right there under your chair, I said. Back in my hotel room that night, still feeling very sensual from the mushrooms, I made love with a former girlfriend who was a masseuse, and later I asked her for a massage. Sure, she said, but I'll have to charge you for that. So that's that little piece of one section of a bunch of dead people that I knew.
It's a wonderful book, Paul. It made me laugh many, many times. Sometimes three or four laughs a page.
Oh, well, that's a good record.
And it's all true. It's all true.
Except the interview with Michael Phelps. I made that up. And I'm only saying it now because I thought it was so obvious, but it appeared in High Times magazine. And I guess lawyers say that, you know, that's actionable. Michael Phelps could sue just because I have him saying that he would like to be on the cover of Newsweek saying, yep, I'm stoned. You know, inspired when he was 12 years old by Ellen DeGeneres, who was on the cover of Time magazine, yep, I'm gay. And, you know, that in this interview he says that he thinks that people should come out of the pot closet the way other decades ago people came out of the gay closet. So, but you know, then I get shocked when I see how intelligent people can be gullible and be pranked so easily. But I shock easily myself. Anyway, so yeah, it's a nice book. It's a nice gift. So people can order too, and then they can listen on stereo.
Right, and they can order the book and the Woodstock director's cut. 3 days of peace and music. And you can have the book and the director's cut for $135. You can have the book for $35. For $100, you can have the movie.
Blu-ray,
right. Blu-ray. Blu-ray. It's time for you to call. You've been listening. Now you call. You call 212-209-2950. Come now. Call now. This moment. Call. 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 Oh, wait a minute. Okay. It's time to do it. It's time to do it. Tell the people who are sitting around in the tally room not to pick the phone up. What we're trying to do is to get people who are listening to just give us like a kind of a vote, a confirmation of the fact that there are people listening and that there are people who are wishing us well just by calling that number. Do not pick the telephone up. But if we can get like 10 or 12 phones to ring all at once, we will have, come on now, let's get one person to go to their phone and call 212-209-2950. One person, call that number, 212-209-2950. Can we have one person? There's one person now. 212, there are two people, three people. 21, do not pick those phones up. 212-209-294. Wow, look at that. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12, 13, 14, 15. I thought we could only get 13 calls in, but we have 15 people calling. That's wonderful. That's great. Thank you very much, all those people out there who are giving us this vote of confidence, even though you are not subscribing. Although, since you have gotten up and since you have made the effort of actually punching those numbers in, should you decide that you want to stay on and pledge to support the station, get one of these wonderful premiums, now is your chance. And if you're if you got a busy signal before, now is your chance, because a few people, knowing what I was going to say, have decided not to, and they have hung up already. But there are some people who are staying on, and I hope they will stay on as I count down 10, until go to 0, 10, 9, 8, 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Okay, pick those calls up. These are people who do want to pledge. Thank you very much. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. At least 6 people. 2, 1, 2, 2. There, there's 3 more. To pick those phones up. 2, 1, 2, 2, 0, 9, 2, 9, 5, 0. 2, 1, 2. You can get either a copy of the 3 Days of Peace and Music, the director's cut of the 40th anniversary Ultimate Collector's Edition, celebrating the greatest rock concert in history, on Blu-ray and on DVD from Warner's Home Video. $100, $135 gets you the director's cut and Paul Krasner's Who's to Say What's Obscene, to, with a post-it note signed by Paul Krasner. 212-209-2950. There are some people who are pledging their support. Thank you very much. And we are inching slowly upwards, trying to raise just a little bit of money. 212-209-2950. You know, the thing about WBAI that makes it different, the thing about all of the NPR stations that makes them different and makes them worth supporting, is that they're not trying to sell you anything but ideas. You know, in our fund drives, we have premiums that we give to people who pledge support in varying denominations. But mostly, we are not trying to sell you some sort of a debt reduction authority or a new car or a used car or anything but the idea. We're not trying to sell you to an advertiser. And I think that that makes us quite unique. And it somehow places us on the side of Los Angeles.
It's the best radio station in America.
Whoa, thank you, Mike. Thank you. You were reminiscing about where you were during Woodstock.
Well, you know, Bob, I missed Woodstock. I was in the Calcasieu Parish Jail in Lake Charles, Louisiana, in solitary confinement for 17 and a half months for possession of 82 tablets of orange sunshine that Timothy Leary supposedly produced, and 2 joints. And so I heard it on the radio. I heard this blurb, and it was this cacophony of sound in the background, and I said, oh, man, I missed that. And then I missed the moratorium demonstrations. But the reward was, and I missed the 20th anniversary, but I don't know if you remember this, but the Life magazine article about Woodstock had this beautiful blonde woman standing on the stage with Santana. And that was the cover of Life magazine during Woodstock. And her name was Blue. And I got to go to the 21st anniversary of Woodstock with Blue and her child. So that was my experience with Woodstock.
It broke all sorts of new grounds, and the critics loved it. And, you know, we were able to really pioneer multiple image and a new way that rock and roll and documentaries was shot. We mentioned that, you know, Roger Ebert said maybe it was the greatest documentary ever made, and others did as well.
I thought it was overwhelming. I think one of the things that is most fortunate is that that film exists that captured the real sense of that remarkable weekend, and it's a phenomenal documentary.
Pauline Kael was head of the Critics Association, so she came in and to see the movie, and she was no hippie at all. And we were all like, oh, my goodness, you know, she's a super critic. Well, she loved the thing. I mean, just thought it was great, great filmmaking. And slow but surely, a number of people came and gave us, not that we lacked the confidence, but I have to admit, you know, I was really nervous because it's like having a hit on your hands, and are you going to blow it? Yeah. You know, are you just going to make it worse, you know?
What surprised me was how well they captured it. That the movie really, in 3.5 hours, gave you a good sense of what that weekend was like for us. And it wasn't just from a, you know, sort of a typical documentary point of view. It really gave you, brought you in.
I think once it came and we saw it at the movies, you know, the opening of it, which we saw in New York, it was very interesting because it was the first time that they used 3 cameras.
It's a damn good documentary. You know, it's a good piece of reporting. It's not journalistic. You know, it doesn't, to me, it doesn't appear to have a view, you know, from the director's point of view.
Many people also talked about point of view, that it was a revolutionary way to convey filmmaking, you know, from the documentary and from the musical points of view, that it gave you a real sense of not only being there, but by also making intellectual connections and emotional connections between material. Through the use of the multi-image.
Why would 300,000, 120,000, 60,000, 70,000 people come to anything, you know, like just because it's music, you know? I mean, was music all that important? I don't really think so, but people don't know, you know, they don't know how to live, and they don't know what to do, and they think that if they can come here, they can find out, you know, what it is or how to maintain with it. Or it's just like people are very lost, I think.
I'd been up to the editing loft when they were in New York several times and watched sort of this unbelievable amount of footage trying to get reduced into what wound up being, I think, 3.5 hours. It was a monumental task, and they did a brilliant job. I mean, it's just, even though we ran out of film, you know, a bunch of times and had to conserve and not shoot some of the acts that I thought we, you know, or at least the totality of some of the acts they should have shot, but given, you know, the circumstance and given sort of what they had to do, it was phenomenal.
I was certainly bent on not just making a music film. And as you know, every single song was put in for its lyrical value, you know, not just its musical value. We didn't select songs that were hits. We tried to use the lyrics as poets would to tell a story.
In America, it was a gigantic movie, and the theaters were full every night that it was on.
People started sitting down, but then as soon as the image came on, been a long time coming, or Sidney Westerville saying,
"My name is Sidney Westerville. I'm the owner of this antique tavern, Munger Valley, New York State."
The whole theater would get up en masse, and they wouldn't sit down for 3 hours. It was amazing, just amazing.
Watching the film was really wonderful. I was standing in the back watching people's reactions and the sequences, the edited sequences. The music is so wonderful, and people really reacted strongly. It was almost like being at the festival again, in a way, but in a more comfortable position.
It had become another myth. We had our own myth that we communally experienced, and then there was the movie, which was magnificent. It's the essence of Woodstock 2.
If another film director had been there who was strictly interested in the music and who had simply done the hits, you know, it really could have been quite a different sort of movie that wouldn't have had the kind of outreach. But because I was a documentarian and had photographed Martin Luther King and Bobby Kennedy and the great movers and shakers of the 60s, then all of that kind of resonated and hopefully showed up in the movie.
People were dancing in the aisles at this press screening, and which validated what we were saying. And I'll never forget Ted Ashley, the head of Warner Brothers. came up behind me, and we were at such a war at that point, that, and he touched me on the shoulder, and I jumped, and he said, "You were right," which was great, yeah. And then, of course, the film did become very successful.
To look at those people in their prime now, I certainly do think it holds up. It's a wonderful document.
We have some more people who have subscribed who don't mind having their name mentioned on the air. Thank you, Walter Skelly. Thank you very much. And thank you, Richard Hirsch. And Stephen Daniels of Orange, New Jersey. Thank you very much. And we'd like to have a few more. 212-209-2950. And if you play, there are people calling right this minute. There are two people on the line right now. Can we have a third person call? 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Come on, you know the number. We've been chanting it at you for a long time now. 212-209-2950. I'm warning you, if you don't call and pledge your support now, I'm going to take some calls on the air. 212-209-2950. And you're on the air. Yeah, I told you he'd be out there, but he, I wonder who...
Flat.
You have perfect pitch, Paul.
Well, I used to. Now I just do it from memory.
Uh-huh. You were a concert violinist.
It wasn't my fault. It just happened.
Well, yeah, how did that happen? You must have liked doing it, though, to a certain extent.
My parents felt it was important for me to play an instrument where you had to use both hands. That's all I can say.
212-209-2950. You get a post-it with Paul Krasner's signature on it and a copy of his new book, Who's to Say What's Obscene? And we're being broadcast right now, I hope, over WJFF in Jeffersonville, Grahamsville, and Liberty, New York, as we are being broadcast on KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, and CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, and we are streaming on the World Wide Web. I've been talking to Paul Krasner about this wonderful new book of his, and you're on the air.
Oh.
What
is that, Pat Boone?
I think so, yeah. It's not exactly glossolalia. It's an impression, not exactly a Rich Little impression, but an impression of a Hopi ghost dance.
Oh, yeah, I can picture that.
I hope he goes away.
If people see in the director's cut, there's probably what was in the original film. A very quick. This was before he was Wavy Gravy. He didn't become Wavy Gravy until December of that year. He was Hugh Romney then, head of the hog farm. And there's one shot of him snorting something. But as he explained to his mother, who saw the movie, it was Dristan, Mom. memories.
Well, they did, the hog farm did a great job of running security at Woodstock, rather than clubs and chains, the way the Hells Angels tried to maintain order at Altamont. The hog farm had bottles of seltzer and cream pies, and if people were causing a disturbance, they'd hit them with the seltzer and the cream pie. And
one of Wavy's plans
I'm sorry.
That's okay.
I was going to say one of Wavy's plans was to have get a Smokey Bear costume. And just, do you know he eliminated the middle name? He never had a middle name, The. I always thought it was Smokey the Bear.
Smokey Bear.
Yeah, I thought it was, you know, like Jesus the Christ. Manny the Bartender.
Or Dewey the Dial Tone.
Yes, a well-known character, along with Reddy Krillowes.
You're on the air.
Hey.
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 How are you doing, Bob?
What's that?
No, I was listening to Paul.
Well, now you're talking to him.
Oh, hi, Paul.
Hey, hello.
Hi, this is George Darrow. I've been listening to you guys forever.
I knew it was somebody.
What's that?
I knew there was just short of a stalker.
Yeah.
Paul, we have been on the air practically from forever.
I think
50 years?
Yeah.
Let's see. I think 1963, I think. No, 62. 62 or 63 was the first time I was in your studio, I think.
Yeah.
Very perfect.
Well, you were in the studio before with Les Davis.
Wasn't that another station?
No.
Oh, really? Huh.
No, it was at BAI on 39th.
I think that's when you invited me. I talked, right. I remember, because I did a commentary on his jazz show, and one time I was talking about abortion rights. This was in 1962 or 63, and I lost my show because it was just too taboo a subject. And that's when you invited me on BAI, and it became my electronic home away from home.
Right. Well.
And I remember you even wanted to get everybody who was listed in the staff box of The Realist on the show, because they all had names like Bob Abel, Featherbetter, John Putnam, Dirty Old Man. I'm still in touch with many of those.
Well,
I never went to my high school reunion.
You had some staff member whose title was Scapegoat.
I had a series of scapegoats.
Uh-huh.
One of them I married, and she became a scape mate.
Not your present scape mate.
No, this is a domestic partner now. I've become a Catholic feminist. They tortured me until I would say that they were right all along.
That's right.
So,
superior being.
Well, at least equal. At least.
You're on the air.
Concert bigger and better than Woodstock. What are you talking about here?
That's the guy, man. Oh my God! Talk about repeat caller.
You're on the air.
Why are you wasting everybody?
You can call it again, huh?
He's an.
And new?
An agent of chaos.
And it's you.
Hello.
Hello, Aaron. Paul, do you know that Aaron's daughter was married last weekend?
Yes, Mazel Tov. Rachel got married at the Sixth Street Garden last Saturday.
Beautiful.
Mazel Tov.
Well, you can find her on Facebook under Rachel K. You see pictures of it. Anyway, I hope the only thing really happening this time around Woodstock is that the commercial thing happening at Bethel Woods, or the freebie at this bar called Hector's over on Route 17B. And of course all these other things happen around the country, or Heroes of Woodstock with Garrison Starship canned heat and 10 years after.
Wow.
That's the only thing really, you know, going down to commemorate it, you know, 40 years later. You know, Michael Lang kind of threw in the towel, I guess.
Michael Lang is not involved with this recreation?
You know, the closest thing he's got is on the 13th, he and some and this photographer named Henry Diltz are supposed to be appearing at the Morrison Hotel Gallery next door to the old CBGBs. I think to advertise the book about Woodstock.
Hey, I have a question. Yeah. At this marriage event, was there a wedding pie?
No.
Just, you know, passing the tradition down.
The thing is, she didn't want the pie to happen, and it was done by a Unitarian minister because he didn't want a Catholic priest. He couldn't get a Reformed rabbi to do a mixed marriage. So with a Unitarian minister named Ron Sala, who's a believer in medical marijuana.
Well, who is this he?
His first name is Andre.
Andre, and his last name?
Tortoni.
Andre what?
Tortoni.
Tortoni.
Tortoni, P-L-A-T-O-N-I.
Tortoni.
Yes, so it's Rachel K. Tortoni is her legal name now.
Uh-huh.
And, I mean, he's about 30 years old. She's 27. You know, maybe your listeners...
Sounds like they were made for each other.
It sounds like they had a platonic marriage.
At that part, I don't know. I'm not going to stay out of that one. But sounds like it was a very beautiful wedding. You know, you see the pictures on Facebook. I mean, and my son Aaron and I had to wear white shirts and black pants as the mainstay males in this, you know. But, oh, well, it was, you know, it was hot weather and stuff. It was well worth it to give her the happiness she deserves. And many of your listeners, you know her for years and years. Maybe she's talked on the air when I'd be on, or some of you may have seen me with her when she was smaller, some of the demonstrations. But now she tied the knots. I'm in shock and awe over this, you know? Because I had to stand there, be the man to give the bride away. Even her mother, Iris, came to town.
Wow.
This too. I mean, so we had all the important people there. Joni Freedom was there, partaking in it, as one of the choreographers. Then we all went to this place called The Inn on Irving Place and 17th Street. It was like a tea house there for the reception.
And it's in the month of August.
What? Yeah, August 1st, yes.
That's pretty good because Irving Place ends at 14th Street, Aaron.
14th Street. 17th Street.
No, he's right. Aaron's right.
Is it?
You're 17th
and 18th. Right.
Sounds like
oh, you're right. Yeah.
I mean,
cab driver.
Uh-huh.
Yes. Who's that?
Mike Avener.
I was wondering who that was, too. How are you doing, Mike?
Good, Paul. How are you?
No, that's not Paul.
That's George.
What happened to Paul?
You said someone.
I'm here. I'm an innocent bystander.
Yeah, he's an innocent bystander to many things.
You all sound alike to me anymore.
Hey, we should get some more people calling to pledge their support to WBAI.
Hey, listen.
How many people we
have on the air. I was on my speech sent in there. Unless you call us, those of you who got some scratch. You know,
hey, Bob, can I do my promo for BAI?
This station is needed. I mean, look, we got to counteract these crumbs who ran around disrupting hearings on health care. You saw what happened with these fascists we're doing all over the country. You know, we got to counteract these people, you know, who are in the pay of the Karl Rove, Dick Cheney gang.
Yeah, they're lying, spreading lies.
I know.
And duping all the people that get their information from television. And they're duping them, and they're just lying, and they're unbridled liars. I mean, they're quite like traitors, I think, myself.
No, they get in the garbage of Fox News. You know?
I didn't hear you.
Fox News is an oxymoron, I thought.
Because what happens is you've got problems. Other clowns like the Plutarch Democrats were no help.
You know, well, we gotta wake up and just become Americans and forget about this parties, and why don't we just be an America, you know, and then live on that, because that could be a really good party state, you know. I mean,
you're on the air.
Hi.
Hi.
It's me, your least favorite caller.
Well, you're cloudy. You're not my least favorite caller, actually. Sometimes you have something to say. Sometimes it's even related to what we're talking about.
Occasionally. Well, I'm in the top five, though.
Well, I won't take that away from you, Cloudy.
In late September, like September 22nd to 26th, the G20 are going to be meeting in Pittsburgh, and it's going to be like a national reunion of radicals and progressives from all over. I would urge Paul Krasner and everybody else to make sure not to miss it. I'm going to try to be there myself.
Mm.
Should be quite a party. They like, you know, parades and stuff.
Let me ask you a question, Cloudy. Do you subscribe to WBAI?
You always ask me that, and you know that my answer is that I maintain privacy about my donations, how much and when.
Oh, I see. Well, now you can maintain privacy on the air. You're on the air. And you're on the air. Oh, yes, you're on the air. And it's you. You're on the air.
Hello.
You're on the air.
Yes, Bob, I do subscribe. I gave $25 into Amy Goodman to encourage her towards full disclosure of the events of WBAI and the Pacifica Foundation meeting last couple of weeks ago.
Thank you, Monroe. And you're on the air.
Last couple of weeks ago.
Thank you. You're on the air.
Hey,
Yvay. You're on the air. Hello?
Yeah, I want to say, how dare George Bush put a democracy in Iraq? Didn't he know that freedom is only for the pretend-to-be liberals like you guys?
I don't pretend to be a liberal.
How dare him put a democracy in Iraq? How dare him? What nerve.
I pretend to be an anarchist.
You know, what nerve he had.
What do you pretend? Hello?
I don't pretend. That's why I said what I just said.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty easy to see.
I'm an independent duke myself.
For one thing, Aaron, the show at the Seabees Gallery, which is now an art gallery for rock photographers, should be quite good. Lang will be there, and it should be quite interesting. So, unless you talk to the people who are putting the show together, I don't think you should put it down.
You're on the air.
What is this nonsense going on?
And you're on the air. You're on the air.
Hi, Bob.
Hi,
Jersey
there.
Jersey City calling, not London calling, Jersey City calling.
Uh-huh.
Hey, listen, your guest, I have his book, Paul. Does he have anything about Archie Bunker, Carol O'Connor, and his famous libel trial? Paul, do you have anything in your book about that?
No. Are you talking about when he... He said
he was sued by someone he called a killer of his adopted son.
Oh, who was really just his drug dealer. No, I don't have anything about that. I'm not sure what there was to say about it, actually. I'm not trying to remember now what the outcome of that was.
Archie won. But the thing is, it's an extension of the Reagan, Nancy Reagan calling drug dealers murderers, you know?
But it was a generalization. He did it as a, about a specific guy.
I know.
That's why it's always easier to refer to a group.
You know, I'm John Karczewski from Jersey City. I wrote a letter to the Daily News, and they it was only a paragraph, and they printed it about how drug dealers should not be bothered on the street corner. You know, they had a big editorial about the evils of, you know, these dealers, and I don't see the Supreme Court or anybody stepping in, you know. Why don't they?
They're chickens. They're victims of
they can break down your door. They can break down your door to get a nickel of pot, and then the CIA funds dealers on the street, right?
You know, that's the way it is. I'm being channeled by Walter Cronkite. But, that's the way it is, you know. And sometimes it's really deeply rooted, like in Mexico, where it looks like the narco gangs are running things.
And the Mexican people are so noble. The ones that I see working in the pharma markets are very mature people, very good outlook on life. But let me go, before I go, I tell you, when I took acid, there was a peak when you had a big grin on your face, and then there was a letdown where you really hashed out your position in the world. And I have come to the conclusion that you can attain this by doing what the Romans and Greeks called the tabula rasa, which is a blank slate, just constantly controlling your emotions, but it's very taxing on the, you know, on the body, you know? Tabula rasa, blank slate.
I don't know if it's taxing, in the sense that, that you kind of, it kind of filters out, you know, because I believe that there's a choice made, The more and more you do it, the more and more the choice becomes almost imperceptible to yourself. But that there's a choice made to be angry sometimes. Not angry.
Just blank. Accepting. You know, open to everything.
Well, yeah, no, that's the opposite of anger.
Yes, but not with the effect of the drug is to produce a euphoric effect, and that's sort of misleading, you know.
Alan Watts used to say it was just it was a shortcut. You know, do you want to walk across America or do you want to take a plane?
Yes, I have his books. I have The Way of Zen in my in my closet.
So,
you know,
his rationale for doing drugs. But I remember when Allen Ginsberg was criticized by the Maharishi. For using drugs and
Allen Ginsberg. Who are you
I'm
talking
sorry,
about?
Alan, now I switch to Allen Ginsberg.
Yes.
And Ginsberg said to him, "Well, you have to remember that a lot of young people that are following you now wouldn't have come into that spiritual path if it were not for the drugs they took that gave them a spiritual side." So. You know, a peek into it. So, you know, but I've always thought that if the universe is infinite, then the paths to connect with the universe are infinite. And so anything that people do, if they do it with enough focus and with enough diligence, it can virtually be anything. It can be, I had a Donald Duck with eight arms. That was my icon for a while. You know, and it's just something... like a buffer between you and the universe, which is
so infinite, it gives you a headache to think about it. But if you have a little Donald Duck with eight arms, it makes it a little bit more bearable.
Speaking of headaches,
Mr. Segway does it again.
This is WBAI in New York City and KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, also being heard on WJFF in Jeffersonville, Grahamsville, and Liberty, and CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, as we are streaming on the World Wide Web. Paul Krasner is here this morning, as is Mike Havner, Bill Propp. Ricky Hirsch was in here and out a bit ago.
I'm about to drop out, but...
Paul?
Okay, I'm going. Thank you very much.
All right, thank you, guys.
Paul?
Yes.
I always accepted Timothy Leary's definition of acid. You know, he said it was psychedelic. And the CIA said it was psychomimetic, meaning it mimicked the effects of psychosis because one of the guys they drugged jumped out of a window at the Statler.
Well, there's some debate about that.
Yeah. And Leary said it enhances what's ever in the mind in the first place. You know, if you're psychotic and you take acid, you're going to get more psychotic. And if you're on a God quest, you're going to take a spiritual path. And if you're just a party goer, you're going to go out and have a great time.
There was once a guy who I was in Leary's office at Millbrook, and he was on the phone with somebody, and then he let me listen on another phone, and the guy was a stockbroker, and he was calling to thank Leary for turning him on to acid because now it gave him the courage to sell short. So, it
was a stimulus package.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, one other event I heard today happened with the Paul, your observation about J. Edgar Hoover never permitting his chauffeur to make left turns. Now the city of Des Moines, Iowa, has outlawed left turns in some key intersections.
The ghost of J. Edgar lives.
Yeah.
But there was a book about that written by a former FBI employee called No Left Turns. It was that nuts that he used it for his title.
Paul, I wanted to ask you before you go, are you still publishing The Realist, and when was the last issue?
The last issue was in the spring of 2001, but you can see it online. There's a guy who's been posting, like, I think, four issues a month, maybe it is, and just Google the Realist Archive Project, and then that'll lead you to the site.
That's kind of a virtual realist, then.
Exactly, that's what it is.
When did you start The Realist, Paul?
In 1958.
Right.
Well, I'll tell you.
I got the right answer. Where's my prize?
Well, The Realist was like a prize to me. I carried it with me all the time I was in the Army, and I used it as a kind of, a test to see whether, I could really relate to somebody.
The first one I ever read was the first thing that really blew my mind was the one about Lyndon Johnson on the plane back from Dallas. And when I read that thing, I went, that's true.
A lot of people.
It really sounded true to me. And I really didn't get that it was satire until I read it two or three more times.
It wasn't.
I thought, this really happened.
Well, you know, that was there was a name to that process, which I didn't even know about when I wrote it, called Apocrypha.
Yeah.
And it was about, and the way it was written was like an onion, and starting off with stuff that was totally true, and then like a seduction, then getting to stuff that reporters knew to be true but was a taboo and was never really in the press, and then getting stuff in there that was rumors and make stuff up, but just leading to that after peeling off layer after layer. Into the climactic scene of presidential necrophilia. But it blew my mind when I published it, and I knew that I was jaded enough that I was confident it would blow the minds of readers. And that was 1967. So this is 42 years later, and it's and people still remember it, including me. It was the favorite thing that I published because because it used an outrageous metaphor image to say to have people believe, if only for a moment, that their president, the leader of the Western world, was nuts.
Because it was true. He was a madman.
Did you ever get to see, Paul, the actual parts left out that were published in Der Spiegel, I believe?
No, I knew that it had been. That was, and that's why it made it more credible, because people didn't know what the parts left out were. So, and I tried to get the original manuscript and wasn't able to, so it forced me to write it myself.
Well, I want to thank you for many years of entertainment and hilarity, Paul.
Well, you know, I appreciate that. It was a two-way street, because if I knew that I was the only one who saw through the hypocrisy, then there'd be no hope. So when people began to subscribe or get it on the newsstands, it was comforting to know that I wasn't the only one, as it was to the reader. So really, it really was interactive before I ever knew there was such a word. And so the book that Bob is talking about as a premium, Who's to Say What's Obscene, and the subtitle is Politics, Culture, and Comedy in America Today, and Arianna Huffington did a foreword, that it continues the spirit of the realist in the sense that the slogan remains the same, which is, well, it doesn't remain the same. It had started out that irreverence is my only sacred cow, but I've come to disagree with myself about that, because these days, when I started out, it was a lone voice, and now irreverence has become an industry, and so there is so much irreverence that a lot of it becomes irreverence.
Reverence is the mad cow disease.
It is?
It was co-opted from you.
Oh, how dare they? Anyway, the point is that in a lot of cases it's irreverence for its own sake, and that's the risk of free speech. But I personally don't like to have a victim as the target of my satire. I would prefer it be the oppressor of the victim. It's just everybody has their own guidelines. So anyway, Bob, thank you for using the book as, it makes me feel good to just be this little part of helping the station.
Well,
always been good to me.
Well, you've done a lot for the station, Paul. One time when you were publishing The Realist, you gave a subscription to The Realist to everyone who subscribed to the station. That was wonderful.
Oh, yeah. Well, I had to build up subscriptions.
Right. I think it worked better for us than for you.
Oh, whatever works, except for that movie.
We'll see if we can get some more people to call in right now to get a copy of your book, Paul. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. You'll get a copy of Paul Krasner's book, Who's to Say What's Obscene, and a little post-it note with Paul Krasner's signature on it, so you can put it in the book and have a artificially created autographed copy.
All right, so Bob, should I mail you a bunch of signed post-its?
Well, yeah, that would be great.
All right.
212-209-2950. Thanks,
all right.
Paul.
How many do you need?
Well, that's not over yet. Well, I want one.
What is a post-it pack?
It depends. They have small, large, tall, and extra large.
I have to work this out.
And don't get writer's cramp.
Okay, well,
comfortable.
Let me know. In the meantime, I'll just start signing them.
Okay.
I'll sign them individually.
All right.
And then I'll leave a blank so that people can fill in their own names.
Good, good, good.
My dear friend, blank. All right. Take care. Have fun,
thanks,
you guys.
Well,
best
all.
Good night.
Good night.
And you're... on the air. You're on the air. Hello?
Hi, Bob.
Yes, hi.
Hi, it's Nancy.
I know, I can tell.
Are we on the air or no?
We are on the air.
Okie dokie. It was great to hear from Paul.
Wow, thank you for saying that. I'm sure he would think it was great to hear from you.
Well, anyway, I just wanted to mention something related but not directly about that. You know, Julius Lester has a blog called The Commonplace Book, A Commonplace Book. And he wrote a piece on July 31st called The Professor, The Policeman, and The President. And I think it is so brilliant, it should be an op-ed piece in the Times.
You feel like reading it to us?
Oh, it's very long.
Uh-huh.
All you got to do for all you people out there in Radio Land is just Google Julius Lester, J-U-L-I-U-S, space, L-E-S-T-E-R, and just click on A Commonplace Book. It is really, really something. It's one of the most brilliant things I've ever read that he's written.
Well, thank you.
Well, you're welcome. Have fun.
Thanks. You too.
Thank you.
You're on the radio. You're on the radio. Is it you? Or you? You're on the radio.
Bob, where did I put it? I can't even find it.
You're on the air.
Guess not.
You're on the air.
Hello?
Hello, good morning.
Hey, it's Sir Edmund the Green calling from the wilds of Ulster County. And looks like there's not a lot happening in terms of Woodstock reunions at Bethel. Other than the usual collection of drunks at Hector's, I think the commercial people that took over the site made a big deal of how they were having a concert there for $19.69, but you cannot buy tickets for that price. They have all kinds of surcharges and fees onto that. And I think a lot of people are actually going to go to Woodstock, where the thing was conceived.
Uh-huh.
And there's some fairly significant forums and whatnot happening up there. Not sure of the exact info, but won't be hard to find.
There's going
that
to be
whole
a
weekend
concert up there as part of the roots of Woodstock, the commemoration of the Sound Out.
I believe also a film on about I'm not sure the name of that. But the other thing
it isn't the 3 days of peace and music, the director's cut, 40th anniversary ultimate collector's edition, is
I
it?
I doubt it. But in Australia they had a festival that was kind of analogous to Woodstock in a place called Nimbin, a little town, and the people actually just stayed there when it was over, and they still have a thriving community in that whole part of northern New South Wales that, is very alternative. With communities, something like 50 different intentional communities within maybe 100 kilometers of that town. And every time I manage to get down there, I always listen to NIM FM, and I'm kind of wishing that somehow you could hook up with them. It would be a wonderful additional station to have on the list of stations that carries radio nameable.
Huh. Well, is it possible to get it on the web?
Yeah, they're on the web on NIM FM. I believe would enable you to find them. I spoke to a few people there, and they said, they might look into it, but they're
I guess, a little bit insular there. I don't know if whatever really happened, but it's a whole parallel existence. In fact, Woodstock and Nimbin are now sister cities, thanks to the efforts of the Woodstock Museum, who brought Benny Zabel to Woodstock and kind of set up that connection. But I keep thinking it would be so great to hook up that little station they have with WBAI somehow.
Well, make it happen. Make it happen.
Yeah, I know. I wish I shouldn't talk about these things without being a little more proactive. But anyway, really enjoy listening. And
Thank you.
I'm wishing I could say, hey, come on up here. There's all kinds of cool stuff happening. But maybe someone knows something I don't. I'd love to hear about it if they'd call in.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Bye.
Sounds like it was fun down under, too.
That's where most fun at. You're on the radio. Hello.
Good morning.
Good morning.
A very good program.
Thank you.
And I enjoyed listening to the fellow that left.
Paul Krasner.
Yes. I really enjoyed his satire.
Well, you'd love his book.
I find that I'm not hearing much about the donations they're calling for, you know? The other night I was listening to the station about 8 o'clock, and I heard a 6 o'clock announcer giving the morning. It was a recorded program. So everything she said the morning, she said the night, including giving the temperature and the time and all that kind of thing. It was rather disgusting, because if you're producing a program, you should know to delete those little, annoying facts.
Well, did you ever read a play called The Madwoman of Chaillot?
No, I've never read it.
Well, there's a character in the play, the Duchess, and she has a newspaper from a particular day, 40 years ago, that was one of the best days of her life, and she reads that newspaper every day.
I could understand that.
And so that's probably what they were doing. This was the best temperature you could possibly have. And this was the best weather you could possibly. And so they're commemorating it. And
you know the fun about it, Bob? The phone was ringing in the background. Well, thank you very much for calling in. And it was just a recording of the morning or the day before, whatever. And it's sort of, you're trying to fool the public. And we would like to deal with some truth.
Give me some truth.
Yes. I observed it because I've been with radio since 1950.
Oh, wow.
And I know about radio.
Sounds like you must.
You've been listening to WBAI since 1950?
No, I've been with radio.
Oh.
I've been involved in radio since 1950.
That's wonderful.
In another country.
Do they have FM there? Or?
No, AM. That was AM at that time.
Which country?
Guyana.
Guyana.
South America, yeah.
Guyana, yeah.
It was ZFY. That was the call letters of the station.
What kind of radio was it?
A regular commercial station, but it was just a 5,000 watt, using one vacuum tube, and the vacuum tube was cooled by a shower.
Amazing.
Yes.
How long have you been listening to WBAI?
I've been listening to WBAI for about 2 years now.
It's wonderful, isn't it?
I love it.
Yeah, I tell you, I've been listening since about 1968.
Oh, my God.
And, I'm hooked on it. And before it went on the web, I used to bounce back and forth between Los Angeles, San Francisco, and New York just to be near a Pacifica station.
Mm-hmm.
And I found that if I was in Houston or any other place, I missed WBAI or any Pacifica station so much that something sooner or later pulled me back to one of those spots. And I always thought, you know, when you listen to BAI, when you first start listening to it, you might hear 100 programs that you don't like, things that you go, oh, I don't want to hear this, you know, but all of a sudden, if you listen long enough,
you'll hear something that you love.
You're going to hear something that's going to snap you up, and you're going to be addicted to this station for the rest of your life, because you know that you will never hear anything like that anywhere else again.
Well, let me tell you something. I love the Wednesday night program at 8 o'clock, the computer program.
Mm-hmm.
That's very interesting. I learn a lot from it.
I
love the discussions that they have. It's informative. You see? And there's a program before that at 7, but I never really paid much attention to it. But the 8 o'clock program on the computers is very good.
Yeah.
And I like these calling programs where you can discuss different subjects, different topics. You learn a lot from it. People comment.
And you know another thing? You know, you listen to commercial radio, it's a constant din of yada, 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 and now another commercial. But you can be listening to WBAI, and you might come across a minute or two of silence. And sometimes that's a relief, you know. You listen and you think, isn't that nice? It's natural, you know. There's actually silence, and you can hear Bob ruffling the papers and dropping the CDs on the floor. And there's nothing phony about this radio station.
Fumbling with the CD player. You know, the annoying thing with WBAI, let me make one comment. The annoying thing with WBAI is that you will call, and the phone rings for 20 times and cut off. You call again, and you can hear on the radio where the announcer is picking up the phone and having blank, you know, numbers coming up, or somebody making themselves a fool. But I'm calling all the way from Brooklyn, and I can't get through.
And you can make a fool of yourself on WBAI.
You see? But I heard one of the managers, one of the directors or whatever, said they're going to install a new phone system.
Oh, I think they've always wanted to install
a
new phone system.
But
we had a great one a long time ago.
Their idea of installing a new phone system so they can see the numbers that are calling.
No, you don't want that.
No, we don't want that.
You don't want that. No, a lot of people would be afraid of calling.
All the radio stations have that now.
Yes, but that's because those are commercial radio stations.
Mm-hmm.
This is a non-commercial radio station, and we want to encourage people to call and call anonymously if they do want to call.
I would suggest that before buying a new phone system, which will cost about $25,000 to $35,000, get better CD players. You see?
Actually,
the problems of the announcers.
Actually, a new phone system nowadays would cost an awful lot less than $25,000.
That was one of the numbers suggested by the director, whoever spoke over it about a month ago or 2 months ago. I heard him.
Well, my father used to sell and develop them, and believe me, even back then, with the technology they had then, it would have cost less than $25,000. Now, I'm sure that it will happen. Hopefully, if enough people pledge, we will get new CD players, we will get a new phone system. But if people don't pledge, then who knows what will happen.
But I have pledged, and I'm a member.
Oh, good. Thank you.
So
thank you.
I'll stay with the station until it sinks. I hope it doesn't. Thank you for taking my call.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling.
And keep the good programs up.
Thank you. And you've heard the premiums a little while ago, but to reiterate, and I won't clean that up, you can get Paul Krasner's wonderful new book, Paul Krasner, Who's to Say What's Obscene? And there's another premium which is Woodstock, 3 days of peace and music, the director's the director's cut, including a Blu-ray as the DVD part of it. 40th anniversary, ultimate collector's edition. I haven't seen this. Anyway, the number for both of them, you can get more information about how to go about paying it, preferably with plastic. You can call, even if you want to just give $25, which will enable you to vote in the next elections. And the number is 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. We have begun to turn around, I think, on this grave financial crisis. And to make sure that we're out of the woods, this fund drive, I think, will be a crucial test. And I think we're headed in the right direction. And we'll know in about 2 weeks how we did. So please call if you haven't already.
Yeah, and I'd like to say something. I've always wanted to say on this program, hello, Cabal. And to the Cabal, I have to say, you know, I think maybe it's age, but is it deteriorating? Because there are so many people who use this program to call in and vent, and you've been listening for years, and Bob is such a generous person, he lets you do it, and you call in, and you don't comment on the program. A couple of weeks ago, Lori Lieberman was on here, sang two beautiful songs for us, and then a couple of people called in and started their weekly rant, criticizing other callers, and I just want to try and shame you guys into going to your phone now and doing the right thing. You haven't subscribed for years, if you've ever subscribed at all, and now's the time for you to go to the phone and make up for all your transgressions and your disrespect.
Yeah.
Because this is Bob Bass's Radio Unnameable. Bob Bass has been on this radio station for 50 years giving his all for your entertainment and edification. And some of the people who pass through this program is astounding. I remember Rigoberta Menchú, the Nobel Peace Prize winner from Guatemala. She was on this program years before the Nobel Committee heard about her. Bob Dylan appeared on this program before most people had ever heard of him. Joni Mitchell, Leonard Cohen. I could go down the list, and there's thousands that I missed. And I think you guys have been entertained enough, and you've been tolerated enough, that it's about time for you to give back. Now, don't you think so? So I'd like to see you people go to the phone and dial 212-209-2950 and give something back to WBAI, because WBAI has given you a lot, and you know it. Okay? And the other thing I'd like to say is, I'd really like to hear more women callers. I'm beginning to think that this is some sort of macho cult that stays up after midnight. I think the women have a lot to say, and it's a welcome relief to hear a woman talking on this radio. And that's about all I want to say.
Well, thank you. That was well. And I like the distinction when you said we would like to shame you into calling something like that. It's interesting that you chose that, because there's a whole distinction, at least in anthropology, between shame cultures and guilt cultures, and you chose the shame, which can motivate.
I thought guilt basically was a Jewish thing.
Yeah, well, that's true. Well, whatever the reason, even if you feel guilty, give. You know, it can't hurt. I mean, it's the same dollars as far as this end is concerned. It's for a good cause. This radio station, that's the real reason that you're subscribing. The other things are nice enticements, and I waited for some of them too, including. Oh, a Julius Lester premium a long time ago, an LP of his some blues songs that he together.
Oh, God, he was a great singer.
And Paul's realist.
I wish I still had his albums. Mm.
I do somewhere.
Do you really?
I have an LP somewhere, but if I don't know where it is, you know, but it's around maybe the Library of Congress, or it might be online in a database. It should be.
They did
lots
a very
of things
good
should
piece
be, including
on,
the realists.
I believe it was on PBS. They did a very good piece on him.
Hmm. I haven't seen that. I'll have to look for it. Wow. We just have some names that were brought in. Thank you, Newark, for bringing them in. And these are people who have recently subscribed. I will read them. I think they can all be read on the air. Yeah, otherwise, he wouldn't have brought them in, I hope. And I'm trying to think where the little... Yeah, here's the checkbox. No. Well, I'll assume these are all okay, and I'll have help to pay if it's not. But I think they're okay. I want to thank...
I thought you're unpaid bill.
Unpaid bill, yeah. Oh, I... It's okay as long as the station gets paid. I like to, too. But the station I'm putting first, you know. Thank you, Pamela. Butera?
Butera.
Yes. Oh, thank you. Pamela Butera in Neptune, New Jersey. Well, thank you very much.
Has been listening since 1969.
Oh, I see now. Yeah. Has been with Bob since 1969. Wow. Well, thank you. Thank you. Welcome to the membership rolls, the honor rolls. I'd like to thank Richard James for subscribing. And he is in, wow, Bozeman, Montana. He's listening on the web. Richard James out in Bozeman. Thank you. You know, I once, let's see, wow, in 1979, I took a trip out there. I'd never been in that area, and especially by train. I took a plane to Minneapolis, and overnight, going through, actually North Dakota, but I was, oh, it's my, hold on. See, that's him calling now. I don't know. Yeah, Bozeman, Montana was one of those cities in the path in 1979 of a total eclipse of the sun. That's my fixation.
Whoa.
Yeah, Bozeman. And I remember that's the first time I had heard of Bozeman because I was plotting that and other cities along the map. There was other places also at the shadow hit, but I wound up in North Dakota. But Bozeman, Montana, yeah, big sky country, I guess. And I'd like to thank, let's see, can you help me with this?
Elaine Spiro.
Oh, of course. Elaine Spiro, thank you. Thank you, Elaine Spiro from Great Neck, New York. Hey, Great Neck. I have relatives in Great Neck, too. I'm upon the poor end of the family. You know, whatever. Thank you, Elaine Spiro. And I'd like to also thank Doris Conklin. Is that correct?
Yeah, Doris Conklin.
Doris Conklin. Thank you. Thank you, Doris Conklin. And you are calling. You were called in the pledge room from Highland Park, New Jersey. Thank you, Doris Conklin. Well, that's that helps the tally. And these go back because we have to be tallied. So you too can be among those either to be read on the air and thanked or not. But the important thing is to call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950, wherever you are listening on the web.
Okay, he was talking about shame. And
yeah,
very articulate way.
Yeah.
I don't think that's a word. But we should talk about shame. This has been a station, part of the Pacifica Network, non-commercial, developed to put on the airwaves voices that aren't heard anyplace else. And besides voices, art, theater, music. And it's true. When it first was put on, there hardly was any FM. Now there is. But things really have even gotten worse. You have the same talk show, AM talk show crap. You have music stations.
Can you say crap on the radio now?
You just did, yeah.
Oh,
Dick Cavett alone, because it's crap. It really is crap.
I'm looking at the seven words now. I don't see crap.
Which ones are you looking at?
I'm not going to mention those, you know. He's dead. Wait a second. He's dead. Yeah. We can't even go there. Anyways, okay, so what I'm saying is that most of the music stations are crap. You have a couple non-commercial stations that worth listening to, but this is a station that has variety, and you don't find that in any of those other radio stations.
And live music.
And live music, and also those radio stations don't believe in being, at least try to be completely objective, where this station will let in viewpoints purposely that aren't on other stations, aren't on other media, aren't on newspapers or anything. And, you know, they've got Rush Limbaugh and we've got WBAI.
And there's music that you'll never hear anywhere else. I remember one time Bob pulled a zither player in from Sheridan Square.
Well,
and he was really good.
Yeah. For one, he had this guitarist, what was he, 17 years old last week?
There were two people up. Yeah, quite talented. They were going to they're at the Berklee School, I think, in their senior year.
Well, who knows? Maybe just like Bob Dylan was on in, I think, 64, right. Maybe we'll be able to say that we heard what, I forget the guy's name, well, those names, you know.
Well, Bob had them on good recommendation, and we had a good... And I was listening to, and I think they have a promising career.
The first time I actually heard Phil Oakes was on Bob's show. The first time I heard so many different, particularly in folk music. Hell, the first time I was up here interviewing him for my high school paper, there was Buzzy Linhart.
Yeah.
But he, as you said, there have been so many people who were famous at that time and later became famous by everybody.
And where are they
on
now?
On Bob's show. They're still around.
Yeah. Well, you know, the first time I got hooked, the first time I tuned into WBAI was Bob's program. It was during a blizzard in 1968. And Abbie Hoffman was on the telephone. And I remember listening, and he said something like, yeah, Bob, we're going to go out in the snow and have a ball. We're going to go out and have a snowball, Bob. And I'm not sure if people today get the meaning of that, what a ball meant in 1968, but I knew what it meant, and it just blew my mind that I heard something like this on the radio, and I've been listening ever since.
Did you see the Chicago 10 documentary?
No, I missed
it. Well, in that documentary, they called it the Chicago 10 because...
two lawyers.
Well, two lawyers and...
eight defendants.
Well, you had one that was taken off.
Bobby Shears.
Anyways, in the documentary, which later it had a theatrical, and then it was shown on PBS as part of which show? Anyway, so it was shown on PBS afterwards.
Not the same cut. We had actually a later cut, some of which did not make it to the PBS production.
Okay, well, that's PBS. See, if there was a TV station from Pacifica, the whole thing would have been on. But in any event. Okay, so you had this documentary, and in it, Bob was best friends with Abbie Hoffman. So what would happen is after court, Abbie would constantly be calling Bob to tell him what had gone on.
I remember that.
Now, since they didn't have footage of the actual telephone calls, they used this animation, which was really quite clever. But I'm just using this as an example of people who have been on Bob's show that you just don't hear, and people on other BAI shows, you just can't get it anyplace else.
Would it be fair to say it's a most creative use of the media, and no matter what it is.
And now Democracy Now! Is on what? On more stations than any other show in the country? Democracy Now! Started at WBAI.
200 affiliates, right. I think.
I think it's more than that.
Oh,
I more
than
it's
that.
A lot more than that.
I think it's 600 or 700.
Something like
that's
that, yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah.
And I believe if you live out in the boonies and you have a big satellite on your roof, you can, it's not a satellite, a big satellite dish on your roof, you can pick it up there too.
We're not pitching tonight, we're not pitching Amy Goodman.
Well, why not? We can do it.
No. She pitches herself, and she does a very, very good job of pitching. And also, she comes in the morning and pitches for BAI. But we are pitching for Bob Fass for Radio Unnameable. Because he's been doing it for so long, and he's been doing it so well.
Yes.
And that's the crutch of the
matter. And it all goes to WBAI, which keeps Radio Unnameable on the air.
But I'd like to mention something about Amy Goodman that listeners out in Bozeman, Montana might not know. You might listen to Democracy Now, but now this is the way I heard it, Bill. I could be wrong, but this is the way I heard it. You know,
would it be Apocrypha?
Amy went to East Timor, which was in the Indonesian, is in the Indonesian archipelago, and she risked her life to report on something that everybody in the world media knew. I knew it. I was a taxi driver. That the Indonesian military was massacring the people of East Timor. They were living in caves. They were eating tree roots. They were being destroyed because they wanted to be independent after the Dutch had left. And Indonesia wanted that island, and they were killing anybody who had any opposition to that idea. And Amy went there, I think, with a sound man.
That's right. Well, Alan Nairn was also there, a journalist.
Did she also get beat up?
She nearly got shot.
Well, yeah, Alan actually got the worst of it, I think, because he was protecting her.
But the point is that she got this story out finally after the world media had just ignored it, and then they gave Amy the Pulitzer Prize for radio journalism. And the way I heard it was Amy went to the big brouhaha, and everybody was there. Peter Jennings, Walter Cronkite.
I don't think it was a Pulitzer, but go on.
Well, it wasn't a Pulitzer.
No, I think it was the Polk.
That's right.
And that she got up on the podium and waited until they presented it, and then she refused it and excoriated the press for ignoring a story that really was concerned the lives of human beings, and she really gave it to them. And this is the person who's a news director at WBAI for many, many years. And this is the kind of radio station you're listening to out there in Bozeman, Arizona. Oh, sorry, yeah. Montana.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
That's right.
We should really... Bozeman, the man from Bozeman, Montana is fantastic because he's listening on the Internet. But most of us listen to WBAI on our radio coming out of New York City, 50,000 watts, which is as many watts as you can possibly have. Now there's the Internet. Some of us...
We even had Alan Watts, in fact.
Yes, but New York City is the biggest radio market in the country. We should be able to raise enough money to pay our rent every month, to pay the antenna at Empire State Building, and maybe even get to the point of like 20 years ago, 25 years ago, where we're paying some of the staff.
You'd think so.
Yeah.
It could happen again. We've begun, I think, what was a turnaround of only, we have only one quarter to show for it, but if the trend continues, I think we're on the upswing.
I think there
is hope.
I am more encouraged about what is happening in BAI now than in at least 7 years.
Shall I see what a caller wants? What they're thinking about? Hello, you are on the air. Yeah. Oh, one lone caller. And the full moon was last night, I think.
Yeah, it's on the wane tonight.
Yeah. I heard a little bit of a sneak preview of this book, which I don't have yet. I haven't pulled the other one. But I heard Janet Coleman got the scoop a few weeks ago. Well, you won't talk about that.
Can I see it, Bill?
Sure.
Janet Coleman is a good reason to subscribe to BAI.
There you go.
She's
okay.
Fantastic.
Yeah. So, and I have that exchange. But that's my first until tonight when I see this book. It's my only introduction to the latest one. Let's see. Shall we take a chance? Hi, you're on the radio. Hello?
Bill, how are you, man?
Hi, this is George.
This is George again.
Hi.
I just wanted to, give you guys kudos. But I wanted to do my promo for BAI. I wanted to just remind our listeners in Alaska and in Bozeman and in up JFF up there in New York And what's the other stations?
CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia. And they may be hearing us on Saturday. I'm not sure if they still pick it up or
well,
have yet to pick it up. But
okay.
They're
well,
hearing
this
us,
though. Well, this is WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City. And I am remotely promoting out in, from Lake Michigan. And if everyone right now or if any time at all the times just sent in $5, we would have enough money to do all those things you just mentioned. And then some.
Then some, yeah.
It's just $5. If everyone just calls up and sends it down to 120 Wall Street, 10th floor, WBAI, New York, New York, 100 something or other.
I think it's 0005.
There you go, 1005.
Mm-hmm.
Just Wall Street. They'll get it.
That's one way,
you know,
right?
$5, man. If everyone, like thousands of people, that's lots of jack. So just, you know, help us out, everyone. Because this is America's radio station. This is the world's radio station, man.
That's all you have to do. Or you can use your finger to do the walking, as the old commercial went, by calling 212-209-2950. Yeah, now the 50 is what we almost got used to, like, year-round. But mercifully, it, you know, people got a chance to say, oh, when we weren't fundraising. Sometimes through force of habit, people, even though we weren't fundraising, were saying 2950. But anyway, we're saying that now. So please call 212-209-2950 or put on a, what's the stamp up to, 44 cents, I think. Anyway, yeah, you can send a check for any amount to Pacifica, make it out to Pacifica-WBAI, and that will assure us that it'll go into the right place.
Yes.
You can put care of Bob Ass on the envelope.
Yes,
or just
and,
WBAI
yeah.
50.
Not on the check.
Not on the check.
Soupy Sales did that, and he was taken off the air.
I almost said 505. No, it's 120
sales,
calls. Soupy Sales. Yeah. Old time. He might, you know.
Was Soupy Sales ever on Bob's show?
I don't think so.
No. But I'm just saying.
Been
that's
nice.
Soupy Sales.
You know, talking about hard to tell reality from. Fantasy, which was a recurrent theme sometimes. I was looking at the tube here, and yeah, there's Al Franken on TV. No, he's not doing comedy, I don't think. But he was announcing the Senate roll call for now or soon to be sworn in Supreme Court Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
Awesome.
Do a double take? I guess he's. This is for real, this one.
Bill.
Yeah.
Can I read a part of this Krasner book here?
Certainly, Mike.
Okay.
Go right ahead.
I like this. In 1965, Art DeLugoff became upset when he read in the New York Times a quote by black poet Leroy Jones referring to slain white civil rights workers. Quote, "Those boys were just artifacts. They weren't real. If they went to Mississippi to assuage their leaking consciences, that's their business. I won't mourn for them. I have my own dead to mourn for," unquote. Jones then extended that lack of sympathy to the 6 million Jews who were slaughtered in Nazi Germany. And so DeLugoff invited Leroy Jones to participate in a debate at the gate, and he asked me to moderate the discussion. Jones agreed only because DeLugoff promised him the free use of the gate for a benefit for the Black Arts Repertory Theater. DeLugoff and voice columnist Nat Hentoff were also panelists. Jones was the star attraction, but he arrived an hour late. Quote, about the 6 million Jews, Hentoff said at one point, "You know, this is a tragedy within a tragedy, and I don't like it being used for rhetoric. The tragedy of those deaths, and there were many millions more Poles and Gypsies and Lord knows who, including Russians, is that nobody, including the Jews and the Poles and the Gypsies, what few of them are left, learned anything from it. I will agree that there's no real cohesive organization, but there are a number of Jewish organizations within the endemic tendency to disagree among Jews. But the fact is, there was no outcry about the A-bomb in Hiroshima. There's no organized Jewish outcry about South Vietnam. There's no organized Jewish outcry about the whole skein of violence that is part of this country's foreign policy. Now, the other part of this is, it seems to me so simple, and yet it also indicates the lack of role reversal ability. What the hell difference does it make to a guy in Central Harlem or Bedford-Stuyvesant or the south side of Chicago that 6 million Jews were killed? I mean, you can't expect a guy on the Bowery, and this is true of a cracker as well, or a guy in Appalachia or an Indian or a Mexican, you can't expect him to be theologian Paul Tillich. He is hurting and he is hungry, and the only Jews he happens to see probably are the storekeepers who, for other economic and determinist reasons, are part of the ghetto. But you really can't bring in the 6 million Jews there because it's not relevant. DeLugoff, I think you're dead wrong, Nat, and I think it's a disgrace. Hentoff, are you going to take my mezuzah away? DeLugoff, because anybody who has the audacity to talk about any human beings that were killed or massacred or lynched the way you have, I think you are saying something that, believe me, you may not like it, but I think it's anti-Semitic. Krasner, not only is your mezuzah being taken away, but your foreskin is being given back. Later we got into the discussion about white power structure. Jones, I do strongly believe that white America represents the most repressive force on the earth today. DeLugoff, just what is it that you want me to do? Jones, I want you to give this club to my father. DeLugoff, but I built this place with my own hands. Besides, this is a marginal operation. Jones, you're a drag. DeLugoff, oh yeah, you're a bigger drag. The New York Post reported this as, you're a bigot drag. In 1971, 5 years after Lenny's death, Groucho Marx wrote to my publisher, quote, I predict that in time Paul Krasner will wind up as the only live Lenny Bruce.
I remember that quote, yeah.
And I took that note as my personal marching orders. I had moved to San Francisco, but the Gate was my stage away from home, and I would perform there every time I returned to New York. Here's an example from a show I did at the Gate in 1981, quote, there's definite sexism in the movie E.T. I mean, how do we know E.T. is a male? Because the little boy says, I'm keeping him. This is a blatant male chauvinist assumption. I've seen E.T. and there's no penis. And even if there were, it would be human chauvinism to assume it was a penis. How do we know it's not just a spare battery holder for E.T.'s finger with the red light? Anyway, Art DeLugoff never did give the Village Gate to Leroy Jones' father, and although the building that once housed that venerable club may have changed, the spirit of the Gate remains a national treasure.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, and you can get that book
as
a premium by subscribing to WBAI and calling 212-209-2050.
And Art is still going strong, living in Riverdale.
I wonder what happened.
For him.
Yeah, he was a guest here, too, shortly before the coup that happened in becoming old.
He went to Nicaragua with us on Abby's tour in 1985.
That's right, yes. I think he was up here in about 1999, maybe 2000.
Uh-huh. I know that there was a writer doing a piece on him, and I...
Yeah.
Oh, anyways, when I spoke to him, I have such a lousy memory, but I know there was a writer doing a piece on him, and I think they were talking about doing a documentary on Art DeLugoff.
Well, it's about time.
Well, that would be, yeah, right.
They're doing a documentary on Bob, which is about time, too.
Another 50-year late.
But that reminds me, speaking of documentaries about Bob, if anybody out there has any kind of photographic records, any kind of memory, preferably in something we can see, look at, the sweeping, or the, I think, the yipping, and let's see. There was, anyway,
The billions?
the beans, yeah. Anything at all related to that period that maybe only your eyes have seen in all that time, 40-plus years. By all means, send them to the people who are doing the film. Let's see now how we can...
You could send it to Bob.
Yeah, you could do that. You could do that. Radio Unnameable, if you Google Radio Unnameable Movie, you can see a trailer, I think, for this, which is still in production. And there'll be directions as to how to hook up with the people who are making it. I think they would welcome that. And it could be added to the movie, and you'd probably get a credit, too. Shall we try another phone? People are calling the tally room. It's inching up, and I hope you keep doing that. Right, George?
What's the
Bill, tally? Do you have an email for you guys? That I can use and you know, send you stuff?
Yeah, well, yeah, I can. Let's see. Well, we have a voicemail. Do you have that?
You can't no, try? I don't. Yeah, let me have that.
Oh, okay, sure. You can call, and we can leave contact information, and we can get back. That is 212-209-2921. Yeah, and you'll hear my voice.
Okay.
Announce that it's Bob Fess's voicemail, and then I'll say who I am, and you can leave your message. And maybe if it's not all, we might actually listen to it, you know?
Yeah,
and I'm
man.
Sure we'll listen to yours, George. I'm sure.
No, I'm trying to cut down being a harassing caller.
You're not harassing. You're never a harassing caller. Sometimes I think whether I'm a harassing caller. At some occasions in my life, I might have been. None come to mind, but I'm sure I'm not without some sin.
But I'll do that. It's a long time to get all of this stuff together to actually, you know, produce something that can help society on the whole, I guess.
And that's what BAI is trying to do as a small but maybe influential voice in helping society as a whole. That's the Pacifica mission, I think, to help reduce the causes of war. You can read all about it. Google Pacifica. Google Lou Hill. That's Lou with an L-E-W, not an L-O-U. You can, there's wealths of information in there. Anyway, let's try another call. Want to do that? We'll stay on.
Okay.
Hello, BAI.
Yes, it's Tom from the Bronx here.
Hi.
I'd like to say that WBAI is truly a hidden treasure on the radio. I only found WBAI one day by turning the dial, looking for other stations on the FM. And ever since then, I've become a WBAI fan.
Well, that's great.
In a lot of ways, I mean.
Would you be a subscribing fan?
I have. I have subscribed.
Okay.
I've been a contributor. I've
Okay, Bill, I'm going to jet. Say hi to Bobby and everybody for me. And,
very good. Okay,
love
George.
And peace, y'all.
Go. Thanks.
Hello?
Now we're out. Yes.
Yes. I'd like to say that it's true that you let other voices on your radio. I was told by another station that said, no, listen, I wanted to get on. And they're very clever on not letting people on that may disagree with them. They only have they've got a policy. They only want to hear from people that agree with them. So if you're listening to the radio and you never call up, you say, oh, everybody that calls agrees with this particular station.
Yes, they're called screeners and filters of content. Yes.
But they're nasty, too.
Some of them, yeah.
The screeners on another particular station unnamed, very nasty, and all that. They don't understand why people can get irritated.
Well, would you like to point out some reasons why maybe people should subscribe to the station?
Well, because it's really it's liberty. It's a liberty, the voice of liberty. In other words, at least you can get your opinion across, and now we're heard worldwide.
Okay, well, thank you for that, and we'll see if we can get some other opinions out there. Thank you. BAI, you are on the radio. the voice of
Unreason.
Unreason, yeah, that's it. I was trying to find the word. Well, I think Bob is, I think, is listening out in the other room, and I have here, well, let's see, what kind of goodies does he have? Could read some more from the book, or, you know, we haven't played
much
of the Woodstock one, yeah. Now, if I can find out.
Not the original one, but the one with all the additional music.
The parts left out of the original, published in there. Let's see, I don't know what this is here, but let's see if we have some identifying material on this. Woodstock audio clips, okay. That's fine. I haven't heard it, and it's really not broken down, so it's a bit of a potluck mystery, sort of a Gallimaufry. There's a Gene Shepherd word for it. A Gallimaufry of everything.
Gene Shepherd, boy.
Oh,
Gallimaufry stew.
There's a show here that does a lot of Gene Shepherd.
Oh, I used to listen to him a lot when I first came up to
Who's had the show for years doing the old radio?
You're talking about Max Schmid.
Yes.
Oh, Max Schmid.
It's another reason to listen to the AR.
That's right. Well, anyway, that's right, that was the tangent went off on. This is a Gallimaufry of cuts from the event Woodstock, not just the movie. I don't know what this is, but maybe it's something that was not in the movie. Anyway, you can have this as well as whatever else is on this. Plus, you can see it in Blu-ray if you have the hardware to play it. All you have to do is to get this and or Paul Krasner's wonderful new book, Who's to Say What's Obscene? All you have to do to get any of this, or just to subscribe, $25 will make you a full member. All you have to do is call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950.
How much is the Woodstock package?
That's the one thing I've avoided is to, because I don't want to screw up. And I think I heard some figures before, but I don't want to give out wrong information. But if you call that number, they have it all in the back room.
And if you can afford the Blu-ray player, you could definitely afford
good
the
point.
Woodstock package.
Good point, yeah. They're coming down in price, but it's still almost three bills. Okay, well, let's see what this is. And I guess I can say right now before we go into it, you're listening to WBAI in New York. And we're also being heard on KWMD in Kisilov, Alaska, and CJLY in Nelson, British Columbia, WJFF in Liberty and Jeffersonville, and we're streaming on the World Wide Web. Shall we hear one cut? We'll come back to talk about it or anything else that you might find timely. Let's give this a try. I have no idea what cut six is, but here it is.
I'm a farmer. I don't know. I don't know how to speak to 20 people at one time, let alone a crowd like this. But I think you people have proven something to the world. Not only to town of Bethel or Sullivan County or New York State, you've proven something to the world. This is the largest group of people ever assembled in one place. We have had no idea that there would be this size group. And because of that, you've had quite a few inconveniences as far as water and food and so forth. Your producers have done a mammoth job to see that you're taken care of. They enjoy a vote of thanks. But above that, the important thing that you've proven to the world is that 500,000 kids, and I call you kids because I have children older than you are, 500,000 young people can get together and have 3 days of fun and music. And have nothing but fun and music. And I God bless you for it.
You know, I just wonder what someone who wasn't born then makes of that. There have been many, many large events for one purpose or another since then. But there was something really remarkable about that because of the, well, there was a certain amount of idealism involved in it. And it was like a moment that people should go back and revisit because, of course, there were lots of mistakes. There were colossal errors, overestimates, over cell phones. Who could be calling you on your cell phone at this hour, Bill?
I'm sorry.
Didn't you see that sign that says "Turn off all cell phones"? Who could that be?
Okay.
Who could that be? Who could be?
About
could be egocentric enough to call.
Well, no, I should have shut off my damn cell phone. It rang before.
Were they chanting?
No. You know, I think about the event Woodstock is, it was, among other things, it was uncharted territory. It was novel. It had never happened before. Nobody knew what was going to become of it as it was happening. You know, that's what, there was a novel moment. There's so few of those.
Well, I still have a different attitude about it because for 3 years before, we had been running fairly well-attended but not necessarily financially remunerative concerts.
How was that?
In the town of Woodstock itself. And, you know, the people, there were no fences facing. And people just walked in and somebody sold them some brown rice, and they ate. And they heard great, great
they did.
Music.
I remember that.
You saw the musicians setting up, teaching each other the music because some of them had, you know, never met before. I remember Tim Harden came on with a new song, and he taught it to the
Black
people.
Sheep Boy was. I heard him do that.
Right.
And I heard Ben Morrison sing there, and Cat Mother, and the All Night Newsboys. But the scale of the event, like in a year or two later, it was like a qualitative change. But those intimate ones at Woodstock on Woodstock Sorority's Pam Copeland's farm were great, all by themselves on their own terms. Hi, I think somebody's on the line here. Could this be? Hello.
Yes.
Hi. Oh.
Fred. Hi, Bob.
Hi, Fred.
Hi.
Hi, Fred.
Hi, Fred.
Hi, how are you, Bob?
I'm okay. How are you?
I'm good. Sorry to miss Paul, but great show. And I'm happy to hear. I hope that Ellen McElwain is on next week. I haven't seen her.
Well, I'm not sure it's going to be next week, but she's in the area. And I've been talking to her. She says she wants to. Actually, our phone machines have been talking to each other. I haven't actually had a chance to talk to her.
Well, that's great. If she happens to be listening, I vote for her coming in. It would be a great show.
Well, she'd be great at WJFF too, if that's the only way.
Well, if we could make a contact with her, I'd love to have her at the station.
How did WJFF do in its fun drive?
We just finished this afternoon.
Oh, how did it do?
And we did well. We exceeded our goal by a small, an incremental amount, but we exceeded our goal. And I had bad news, but it turned out to be good news. We again had trouble getting your feed, probably because everyone ran out right after the fun drive, but, as it turns out, we're going to be carrying WBAI through the morning, so I hope that your fundraising doesn't offend our audience here. But since we've finished our fund drive, if anyone has money left over after pledging to WBAI, we would still accept more at WJFFradio.org. And I just wanted to mention that Our website is wjffradio.org, because wjff.org is the Washington Jewish Film Festival. And people may have been making that mistake for quite some time, so I just wanted to mention that. But you just played a clip from this past week's Sullivan County Democrat. There's an excerpt of an upcoming book by Sam Yasger, Max Yasger's son.
Uh-huh.
And the headline is Just a Farmer, which is what he said when he first took the stage. I'm just a farmer. The headline is Just a Farmer meant much more to Max Yasger. And just a quick paragraph. Many people, particularly urbanites, use the word farmer as a pejorative. They pronounce it with disdain. To them, farmer is only one step short of redneck. They use farmer to describe someone who they perceive as a hayseed, someone with dirty overalls, this and that. But he goes on to defend his father, and he said he was never defensive about the term. Quite the contrary. Time after time, he used the term farmer to disarm those with inflated egos. Time after time, he made good business deals with self-important people who thought they were taking advantage of someone who was just a farmer. He let them think what they wanted. He mastered the ability to use that term differently according to the situation and to great effect. He really was quite a guy, and I'll mention one other farmer who was, I don't know, I think was in the same cut of the same cloth, and that was Abe Jaffe, the father of Naomi Jaffe and Bernard Jaffe, two of my favorite people. But
where is Amy Jaffe these days? I mean, Naomi Jaffe, because I went to school with her.
Without mentioning her early days, she's now proofreading legislation in Albany.
Good.
Oddly enough,
I think you should mention her early days.
I think
be a source of pride.
Yeah.
Well, actually, you're very right. She was in the Weather Underground, and she was. I don't think we've never really spoken about it, but I don't think she was. Well, as people should know, the Weather Underground never hurt anyone but themselves. When a bomb on 11th Street went off while it was being manufactured.
She was also instrumental in sort of making the Miss America passion come to terms with itself and its raison d'etre.
That's right. That's right.
Atlantic City.
I think
was
Naomi
the original bra burning event. Of course, they never got to burn their bras, but it made all the papers.
Well, I remember the story about Timothy Leary, the good deed they did for Tim Leary, and actually I wish they were around and do the same favor for Leonard Peltier.
Well, maybe it can be done with less drastic means. I mean, like walk out the front door. That would be nice. And he has had a parole hearing, I think the Tuesday before last, but they'd like to keep it on under wraps as to what they're going to do. I guess they want to see
which way
the wind blows.
They said they would have their decision in 2 weeks. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, we might as well just take the 10 seconds and give the phone number, because I think the only person that can make a difference right now is Barack Obama. And the phone number is area code 202-456-1111. And you'll probably get a message machine, but people should really comment on, please release a community organizer. I mean, Nelson Mandela was a community organizer, now they want to have a worldwide holiday, and Barack Obama was a community organizer, and now he's president, so why leave out Leonard? You had a previous caller about asking who was going to appear at the Woodstock celebration this year.
Richie Havens, I think, is on Friday at noon, right?
I think so.
That's pretty early.
It's Levon Helm and Jefferson Starship, 10 Years After, Canned Heat, Big Brother, Mountain, Tom I can't pronounce that name, and Country Joe McDonald. So that's a pretty good lineup, and the tickets aren't. We can't mention prices. Tickets are reasonable.
Is it going to be in Woodstock or in Bethel?
That's at Bethel. That's at the Bethel, at the original site. And again, very quickly, I don't want to take, I want to make room for someone else, but again, in the Sullivan County Democrat, which is just sc-democrat.com, they have a page weekly for down the decades, and it goes from 130 years ago to 10 years ago, and 40 years ago, opposition to the Aquarian Exposition, the Rock and Roll Festival, without an apparent home as yet, came to the fore when a committee of concerned citizens of Bethel was formed to oppose Woodstock Ventures Music and Arts Festival. And then it goes down, and there was a demonstration, but it was it was canceled due to rain. Yeah, it was a rainy period, I guess, much like this year. The Bethel Businessmen's Association has endorsed the event. Concerned citizens are seeking to oppose it, and the town board and the zoning board of appeals are caught in the middle. So it went right down to the line within days before they got the okay.
So I guess a lot of youngsters can come by and see the spot where their parents were conceived.
Yeah, and I heard the top of the program where the cover of, I guess it's the cover of the book or the cover of the album with that couple with a blanket around them. We also did a local paper also did a article on them. One other quick thing is I've been in touch with Rod McDonald's folks, and I think I'm going to try and put together. This is breaking news because tomorrow I'm going to speak to the station manager about it. I spoke to Rod McDonald's manager and to Teokas and Ghost Horse, and I think we're going to have a pre 20th anniversary for WJFF in October. I think all the ducks are in a row, and hopefully they'll agree. So I'm going to spring it on them tomorrow and see what happens. And of course, now the word may get out if people are listening up here, but so be it. But anyway, great show. Our fundraiser is over, and good luck with yours.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Fred.
Do you have a board of directors at your station?
We have a board of trustees, and we've also just, new bylaws have just been drawn, and the ink is barely dry, so I haven't read them. All I know is that a new member is, the whole board isn't up for an election. It's like a rotating election to where they elect, I think, three members every several years or something like that. So we have a board of trustees, we have a programming committee, and we have a community.
Who elects?
Well, they're elected by ballot. The new bylaws are...
Who votes?
The members of the station vote. Anyone?
Who are the members? The subscribers? The people who
yes.
support the station?
Yes, people who support the station.
I see.
It's fairly democratic.
Sounds like it might have some problems, but it's an attempt to do something. We're doing something similar here at WBAI, and we're having some problems, but I have no doubt that the good guys are going to triumph.
I hope so. I hope so. May the force be with you, as they say.
Yes.
So far, the farce has been with us.
Okay. Yeah. Okay for you guys. Great
Thanks.
Show, Bob.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
You're on the radio. No. You are on the radio. Hello? Hello?
Hello, this is Cloudy. Is Fred still there?
No, Fred. Fred is gone to bed.
Oh, well, because I know that once he mentioned on the air that he wanted to hear from me, you can reach me as Cloudy Scribbler on Facebook or at cloudynoiser@aol.com. Speaking of Art DeLugoff, family folklore has it that about 50 years ago, when I was just a toddler, he was visiting my family on Fire Island, and I bit him on the ankle.
So you were an ankle biter, huh?
Right.
Still are, I think. Okay, Patty. Thank you.
I guess that has to be true.
Yeah. Right.
Why don't you people grow up?
Hello.
Hi, you're on the radio.
Hi, Bob.
Oh, hello.
It's Tom from the Bronx here.
I thought that's who it was.
Yes. I hope that you had gotten my communique.
This week? No.
Well, anyway, I had sent it.
You recommended doubling up, right? Double teaming.
The which?
Double teaming for fundraising.
Yeah, well, I did that too, yeah. I had written a gentleman on 3 p.m. in the afternoon, and I asked him to give you a communique letter that I had sent him, a spiral book.
I have yet to receive it.
Oh, you didn't receive it yet?
No, not yet.
Anyway, okay, you can ask him anyway when you see him.
Well, I might very well see him. There was some talk about my coming in to pitch with him.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Well, anyway, I believe...
I said I would be happy to if he would come in and pitch with me.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah. Well, it sounds good to me. Anyway, doubling up wouldn't be so bad, I think, in certain instances, just as an experiment. To experiment with, the host there doubling up and making appeals, you know.
Well, I thank you for your interest.
Yeah. Well, I like the idea. Uh-huh. If I can only become the director for a month, that would be lovely.
Or
but I don't think they would want me as a director for a month.
King for a day.
Yeah, all right, King for a day. That sounds good.
All right. You're on the air.
Well, I like the idea. I can only become the director for a month.
Hello?
Hello. That's the way back, or the slightly far back machine.
Babies use his way back machine. Too arcane a reference.
Maybe the chanter swallowed his tongue, and it's like his radio is on.
Wishful thinking.
Yeah.
B-A-I.
Hi there. A couple of things about the natural gas situation, the fracking and all of that.
Yeah.
Can you say that on the air?
Oh, huh? No.
Go on.
Not on. because of the good work that fellow did on WJFF, now a lot of downstate politicians are well aware of the problem And of course, they're going to very apparently carefully vet this process, and they're even talking about finding a way to just use water or steam as opposed to that witch's brew of chemicals that they shoot through the rocks normally. So
water is a problem too.
Yeah.
Because when the water is done fracking, or when the steam condenses, it accumulates another witch's brew of toxins.
That's right, and that's why I think that this probably won't happen. But there's two things going on in the world right now in terms of this issue, and one is that a lot of these natural gas, fracking, expeditions are being called off because we're in a recession, depression, and there's not. You know, there's just a lot of reserves now of oil and natural gas, so a lot of companies have folded their tents for the time being. So that takes a lot of pressure.
Folded their tarps.
or folded their tarps in this case. So yeah, so they so that takes a lot of pressure off upstate right now because and it buys time for the legislature to very carefully consider and hopefully defeat this. But the other thing that's really interesting is
gee, wait a minute, you just said something kind of funny, didn't you?
Go ahead.
You mean the New York State Legislature doing something carefully and considerately?
Well, once they can tie their shoes, you know. But maybe we'll. In other words, this is after the electoral process. Maybe we'll get some new people in there that can do a better job. But the other energy thing that I heard from, you know, another part of the globe that's really interesting is that apparently in Bolivia there's this huge salt lake bed that dwarfs, you know, the one in Utah, and they're going to be they evaporate, to make a long story short, they're building this plant now to evaporate the salt, and what comes out of it after a day or two are lithium crystals. And they're saying if this is done right, Bolivia will be the Saudi Arabia of the future because of all these electric cars that are coming online. That just they have about 60 or 70% of the world's reserves of lithium. This is just this vast, endless salt flat that where fairly easy extraction can happen. So, you know,
Bolivia is the place where you get all those great white powders, huh?
Well, the funny thing about that is that both in that natural resource and in their oil and coal and everything else, they've been roundly exploited where it's one of the poorest countries on the planet. And this time they're determined to do it right where they make a few bucks from this if they're going to supply all these electric cars with, you know, for the lithium.
Speaking of trying to earn a few bucks.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
This is our marathon here at WBAI, and In a moment or two, Ahmed Ali or Ibrahim Gonzalez will be here within the moment. And I must say, I'm not completely spectacularly overcome with a feeling of success at the money that we raised this morning. Not even $1,000.
Yeah, and we had a great premium or two also.
Yes, we had wonderful premiums. And
you should say them again, though, for the latecomers.
Well, okay, latecomers. There are two things that you can get as premiums. One of them is a really extraordinary movie of Woodstock, the director's cut. 3 days, a piece of music, 3.5 hours on either DVD or Blu-ray, and it includes at least 18 performances that have never been seen before. Joan Baez, Country Joe McDonald, Santana, Canned Heat, Mountain, Grateful Dead, Creedence Clearwater Revival, The Who, Jefferson Airplane, Joe Cocker, Johnny Winter, Paul Butterfield, and Shanana. These are not exactly unknown names in the field of musical excitement. You might want these, and you can get them for $100. In this wonderful movie. And for an additional $35, you can get Paul Krasner's Who's to Say What's Obscene, which is his latest collection of essays. And they're funny and they're poignant. And you're going to want one, either for yourself or your friends. And you can get it by calling 212-209-2950. And if you don't want it, well, what's wrong with you?
And if you like Lenny Bruce, you'll love Paul Krasner. He's a wit for the ages, that's for sure.
Well, Paul is much kinder than Lenny was.
Yeah, he's right. He's not as acerbic, but he's just as smart and you know, sharp. That's for sure. But before I go, can I say something quickly about Arlo Guthrie? He was interviewed in a one-pager in the magazine section of the Sunday Times a week ago, and he said that he's switched over to the Republican Party because, quote, the country needs a loyal opposition. So I don't know if he was kidding or not, but that was pretty weird. Anyhow, thanks for letting me speak, and those are two great premiums, I tell you.
So how can people get one or both of those great premiums?
By calling 212-209-2950.
And we got a call from Montana today.
Bozeman,
Montana. So if you're listening out there along the
big sky,
big web, that would be nice to hear from you. We'll probably be back next week, although with this terrible showing, they may decide to put something else on instead.
Oh, you still did better than the rebroadcast. Whatever was raised then was nothing, I think. That was an ill-fated experiment, the first 2 days of the marathon, but anyway.
Well, may try it again. But if you are among those who pledged, thank you. And if you are not, there's still time. All you have to do, as we leave you, is call 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. So, thank you.
Thank you.
One more?
You're on the air.
I did a concert better than Woodstock. Why not a word about that?
I don't know. Maybe you can tell us about it sometime.
Hello? Hello?
A late night check-in, Bob.
Ah, just like John.
That's it.
Hiya, John.
Hey, John.
Hey.
John McDonough.
That's it. Cruising the streets here.
Yeah? What's it like out there tonight?
Well, I'm coming from the new hipster heaven.
Where's
called
that?
Bushwick in Brooklyn, which the real estate agents are now calling East Williamsburg. So at some stage, all of Brooklyn will be called East Williamsburg.
I was out there the other day. It's interesting what's going on out there.
It's Mike Havner, who's just waiting for his chauffeur's license.
And yeah. I haven't driven in 22.
Please remember that this program is supported by the listener members of WBAI New York. If you like what you hear, please consider becoming a member of WBAI or renewing if you've already joined. Basic membership is $25, but we accept any amount. Help us keep free speech alive.